Since the election, Republicans have been passing a series of, I guess you can call them voter reform laws that seek to kind of pull back a lot of the leeways that were given because of the pandemic. To make it simple, because of the pandemic, we made voting very, very easy. And with that ease comes a lot of insecurity. So a lot of Republicans have been saying, okay, let's pull back a little bit of the mail-in voting. Let's reduce some of the hours. But for the most part, a lot of these bills still leave a lot of open space for Democrats. That's not stopped the media and Democrats from saying these are voter restriction bills because they want to retain every single leeway they got during the pandemic. Right now in Texas, there's supposed to be a special session where they're going to vote to actually have some of these reforms, but the Democrats have fled on three private jets to D.C. illegally to block what's called a quorum. So we're going to talk about this, and we've also got a bunch of other stories. South Africa is getting crazy. I mean, the looting, the violence, the rioting is so severe. You're seeing videos of citizens just shooting at rioters. There's even videos purporting to show police officers joining in the looting. Now, I don't know if that's true and completely, but there's a lot of accusations showing cops loading up vans. So maybe that's the case. And so we'll get into all this. And we have a great guest to talk about what's going on in Texas. Someone who's actually now running for the governor of Texas. Yeah. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West is joining us.
It's good to be back with you, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Right on. Do you want to just do a quick little 30-second intro? Or just tell people who you are?
Well, just, 22-year combat veteran, United States Army. Also a former member of the United States House of Representatives. Been living there in Texas since 2014. I'm the former chairman of the Republican Party of Texas. I submitted my resignation on the 4th of June, and on the 4th of July announced my candidacy for the governor of Texas.
Did people see that one coming?
I think a lot of people thought that it was something out there, you know, but we kind of kept people at bay. But when I put in the resignation from being the chairman, some folks realized that, yeah, he's looking at going into elected office again.
We'll talk about that, too, because Texas is one of the states that people really love. Yeah. I mean, for one, everyone loves Texas.
Yeah.
But considering what happened with the lockdowns, Texas and Florida are way up there with what people appreciate. So we'll get into all that stuff, too.
Sure.
We got Ian chilling.
What up, everybody? Ian Crossland over here. Alan, good to see you again, man.
Good to be back, man.
I'm excited to hear your story about how you winded down with the head of the Republican, what was it?
The head Republican of the Republican Party of Texas, yeah.
And how the transition was. So let's get into that in a little while.
Yeah.
I'm also here in the corner. I'm very excited to hear some more of Lieutenant Colonel Alan
Miss
West.
Producer.
That's right. I'm here. I'm very special. I want to hear that wisdom. So I'm excited
to get
into
it tonight. Okay.
Right. Before we get started, head over to timcast.com, become a member, and you'll be doing two things. For one, you'll get access to our exclusive members-only segments, which there will be one after this show. Usually it goes up around 11 p.m., and this one's going to be a bit spicy. There's a big story that we probably are – we'll save that one for the members only. It's about a rainbow monkey. You may have heard this one, but we're going to save that for the after show because this one's going to get probably too spicy for YouTube. But become a member because not only are you doing that, but you're helping us expand, and you're actually going to get a preview for those that are watching of what the new website is going to look like. It is alpha demo version, but we're actually using one of the articles about Texas that we have from the alpha version of the site. So you're going to see the site's going to look fantastic, and then you'll know what your membership helps support. So again, timcast.com, become a member, but don't forget to like this video, subscribe to this channel. Right now, share the show with your friends, post it on Facebook or Twitter, wherever else, with a subject matter, what we're talking about, because that's the most powerful thing anyone can do right now. As most of you probably know, the big tech companies censor. They just censored Donald Trump's speech at CPAC where he was talking about censorship. It's beautifully ironic. It's a fire truck on fire. There's one thing they can't stop, though. When an individual decides to share content that doesn't fall outside of their nebulous guidelines, they're always trying to change the rules and argue something. But as long as the content can exist, they'll try to suppress it. Soft power, soft pressure to shut it down. When you share it, you overcome every obstacle they throw in our path. But keep that in mind for all of your favorite channels, be it Crowder, Sticks, X, and Hammer, or anybody else. You got to be sharing that content. So let's read this first story. Let's just jump right into it. We got NBC News reporting, Texas Democrats flee state in effort to block GOP-backed voting restrictions. The lawmakers are on their way to Washington to advocate for federal voting rights legislation, risking arrest by leaving during the special session. I just want to point out very quickly, I love how it's always framed in the media, voting restrictions.
Voting suppression.
You give them an inch, they take a mile.
Absolutely. And one of the things you have to understand is if you go back to April of last year, Eric Holder, who is the chairman of the National Democratic Redistricting Committee, wrote an op-ed piece in Time magazine. And the title of that op-ed piece was How Coronavirus Should Permanently Change Elections in America. And what did they lay out? They lay out the fact that they were going to use universal mail-in ballots, which is different from absentee balloting. Absentee balloting is a control mechanism. You have to send in, like in the military, you have to send in requests for the ballot and it's sent back to you. Controlled, absolutely. But they're talking about just flooding the zone with ballots that are out there. And one of the things that we evaded in Harris County, which is the largest county in the state of Texas, third largest in the United States of America, is around Houston. The county clerk down there wanted to mail out 2.7 million ballots against a voter registration roll that had never been reviewed.
What?
Wow.
And I think if 2.7 million ballots had just gotten out there in Texas, which Donald Trump only won by 620,000. Now, that's the type of thing that they want to have. They want to have 24-hour voting in Texas. So I guess we're going to have polling locations at Waffle House and Denny's and things of that nature.
Unchecked. Nobody watching.
Nobody watching. And then the other thing that they want is curbside voting. Now, curbside voting in the Texas Constitution is very clearly defined. If you are, you know, unable to get out of your car, you go to a polling location and you arrange for your ballot to be submitted there at that polling location. They just want curbside voting anywhere. As a matter of fact, that exact same person, Chris Holland, set up 9 different curbside voting locations all across Harris County. Now, those are the type of things that we're trying to eliminate from happening. Signature verification. Stop having poll watchers, Republican poll watchers, being bullied and not allowed to go in and do what they're supposed to do, watching the ballot counting process. But what is so funny, Tim, because, you know, I just flew up here to D.C. I was on an American Airlines plane. I had to wear a mask and everything. But there's a picture of these Democrats flying up here on the private jets. And guess who's sitting on the front row of one of those private jets without a mask? My state representative, Retta Bowers.
Wow.
Throwing up the peace sign. So I really do feel represented. Thanks a lot, Retta.
Real quick, I also bet to get on that plane, you had to show an ID.
I bet they didn't.
You.
Oh, I had to show an ID.
Right. Yeah. Were you able to board the plane curbside?
No, I was not able to board the plane curbside. And I had to be on time. It was not a 24-hour window for me to board the plane.
Did the plane come to your house unannounced without you asking for it and then offer you a ride?
I don't really have a good runway.
See, it's funny. I mean, obviously, I'm being a little bit facetious, yeah. But with these voting restrictions, it eliminates a lot of the security. Basic security.
Absolutely.
Curbside, I mean, when I during the primaries, mm-hmm. when I was in New Jersey, I got a mail-in ballot for somebody who did not live at my house,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know why. It was a legit full ballot, and what am I supposed to do with it? It's not mine. I don't know. It's election mail. I don't want to touch it.
Yeah, but when you combine that with ballot harvesting,
oh yeah,
and the next thing you know, someone comes around and picks up that ballot, and then it is actually officially counted. See, that's what the left wants. And the other thing that I find so interesting is that these Texas Democrats who are really obstructing the legislative process in the Lone Star State, they're up here talking about more federal control of elections. Well, the Constitution does not give the federal government any enumerated power. It has not delegated any power for them to run elections in the United States of America. There's no centralized control, but that's one of the socialist tenets, is nationalizing production, not just economic production, but also all we see elections.
They have to do it one grain at a time.
Yes.
They can't just come out. But this H.R. 1 that they're trying to do federally, it effectively nationalizes
it does.
Elections. And the point, this is lost on Democrats. It's the craziest thing, because it's not a Republican issue. It's basic American civics that mm-hmm. each state has. The senators represent a state to the federal government because we are a union of sovereign states.
Free and independent states. That's what the Declaration says.
So each state has their election and determines who they want to submit as electors.
Yeah.
I don't know where this myth or this lie comes from, but you have a very large uneducated population of people who genuinely believe a national popular vote makes sense because they don't understand that we are a United States of America.
Absolutely. And it's a representative democracy. So now all of a sudden when you read H.R. 1, what does H.R. 1 says? H.R. 1 says that there will be no picture ID anywhere in the United States of America. Really? And there will be no voter registration roll review anywhere in the United States of America. Really? That there are going to be universal mail-in ballots. That's going to be the standard all across the United States of America. So basically, we're just going to mail out ballots all over the place, and people can fill them out like you just talked about.
It's like treating our elections like a raffle. You know, I don't know. You got to take us got a number on it, right? Congratulations. You won the prize.
Well, you know what's so amazing, Tim, is, and, you know, Ian and I were talking previously, you know, at the times that I served in combat. I was in combat trying to help people establish voting systems that now are probably better than ours. I mean, you know, everyone remember the purple finger. Well, now, I mean, I don't think we have any way of really determining who's been voting out there.
Where were you when you were trying to set up the voting system?
That was in Iraq. I mean, in Iraq and then also in Afghanistan. We were trying to implement these democratic principles and fundamentals. And now here in the United States of America, we're eroding and undermining our democratic principles and fundamentals. We used to be the gold standard. Show me another country in the world that says we're just going to mail out ballots.
Without checking.
Without checking.
That to me is absolutely insane.
Well, it is insane, but that's how you get the one party control, which is exactly what the progressive socialists want in America.
It's, you know, I look at, you want your voting system to be a well-oiled machine where each part of that process is mappable. You can track this piece goes to this piece, to this piece, to this piece. So when the ballot comes out, we know where the ballot came from. We know who sent it. We know who got it and why, whether they went in person or they got an absentee ballot, which has mm-hmm. that chain of custody. Now it seems like they're just trying to turn it into a splotch.
They
you
are.
You can't track where things are going. You can't, you know, yep. we had that election, I think it was in North Jersey, where they found a big bundle of ballots all just tied together, absentee ballots, and that it made no mathematical sense. So this caused a federal judge to say, do over.
Mm-hmm.
We can't have that. How are we supposed to have confidence in a system?
Well, you can't. And, you know, this is what has happened that is not coincidental. So at the same time that we're trying to nationalize elections and not have any picture ID, no signature verification on these mail-in ballots, we got an open borders policy. We got hundreds of thousands of people flowing into the state of Texas, or planes that are all of a sudden showing up in the middle of the night in Tennessee.
Well, before we get into all that, I want to mention something about that. You know, those people get represented in the electoral vote regardless of whether or not they cast a vote.
That's because the left does not believe that the census should be based upon citizenship.
Yep.
They want the census to be based upon numbers. And so they're flooding it in because they want to have what? They want to have those districts that will lean more so toward the Democrats.
I think it was Tucker Carlson. He was saying that Democrats want illegal immigrants because they want votes. Something to that effect. I think it was Tucker. And the media went nuts. It's funny when you can tell when someone's over target, when they're like, oh, he's a racist and a white supremacist. And he's technically right, but he misses one piece of it. Democrats don't need illegal immigrants to go and vote. They just need the census.
Yes.
So in California, I think it was maybe Heritage. They said that California gets about one extra electoral vote because of the amount of illegal immigration in the state.
Mm-hmm.
The illegal immigrants are counted on the census. Congressional seats are then apportioned based on the census number, not the amount of citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get electoral votes based on how many reps.
And think about what you just said. What just happened in this last round of the census? California lost an electoral seat.
And New York, I think, too, right?
And New York, too. And guess who picked up, too? Texas.
Wow.
Nice.
Right when you have the open borders and everything that's happening. And why did you see them all? Remember, they pushed off the census. They pushed off the results. And as soon as Joe Biden gets in, what's one of the first things he does, unconstitutionally by executive order, opens up the borders. And now we have the flood of people that are coming in.
To be fair, though, California's got some pretty open border policies. I mean, they're offering up health care to illegal immigrants under a certain age. So, you know, they ended up losing, I think, because of the mass exodus. But I'll also throw this out there as well. Texas did gain, but I think people are fleeing California into Texas.
They are. And there are two types of people that are fleeing, not just California, but Illinois, New York, New Jersey, coming into Texas and other successful red states. You have those people that have given up. They say, I'm tired of it. I'm a conservative. I want to go somewhere where I can live under conservative principles and policies. But then you also have the folks that are part of the transplanted workforce. When you pick up and you move a corporation or business, like we've seen State Farm, Liberty Mutual, Toyota North America, Elon Musk coming out of these places. And the key thing is that we have got to convey to these presidents and CEOs, tell your folks that if they want to continue to vote like that, stay. But don't come here to Texas, which you're trying to come here because you want to benefit from our economic policies. And the next thing you know, it's I call it the locust effect. Because California used to be a strong red state.
Oh, yeah. Until like, what, 92, I think.
Absolutely. And look what happened.
Yeah. Have you ever seen that comic somebody made where Joe Rogan, he's walking from California to Texas? And he's carrying, he's got a travel bag that says liberal policies on it. And then there's like a cowboy in Texas like, whoa, don't bring that with you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and a lot of people down in Texas will say, we need to have a border wall, not just on the southern border, but also on the west side of Texas as well. And we need to have people turn in that blue card and we can give them a red card.
Yeah, you got to vote this way. Yeah. I mean, I moved out of Philly and we're now basically in West Virginia. And I've got a bunch of people here like, you know, I went to a store. It was really funny. because they were talking about, oh, these liberals are moving out here and you can tell. And then I laugh and I'm like, yeah, I'm one of them. I moved from Philly. And then their eyes just like,
oh yeah, they squint.
And then I went, don't worry. I'm not going to vote for any of their, you know, people because I'm jaded. And they went, oh, okay. All right. Well, vote Republican. And I was like, if they're good, I'm not playing those games anymore. You know,
well, you got to vote on principles. And I think that that's one of the things that you're looking at, that is happening in the country is that, it is no longer so much about political party. It's about your principles and values. It's the ideology. It's the principle, the philosophy of governance. Because you can have Republicans that are progressives. You can have Republicans that believe in big government spending and things of that nature. As a matter of fact, the United States Chamber of Commerce supports open borders. Why? Because they want cheap labor. And that still hurts people, too. So you got one political party that wants, because of quote-unquote votes or to skew the census and the population, then you have another political party that wants the cheap labor.
This is something that I was just thinking about recently because the Southern Poverty Law Center called me a reactionary, which is funny because I'm like actually kind of a reformer, which is not, you know, reactionaries want to keep the old system. And I'm like, no, I think we got to make a lot of changes to that system. I just don't want to burn it down. And I thought it was pretty funny because policy-wise, you know, I'm thinking about the political compass and like whether I'm, you know, I'm like, what are my positions? And so I actually, on the political compass test, I'm fairly left libertarian. Mm-hmm. But I think there's something that easily, like, you can easily understand this. I think you and I like America, the Constitution. We like the country. Yeah. We like our borders. We
like our freedom.
And there's like a difference in policy ideas. But the interesting thing about this is if I say something like I'm actually in favor of a basic universal healthcare system with private insurance, that doesn't mean left anymore unless you hate America. It's, and I know it might sound a little bit hyperbolic or exaggerated to say like this, oh, you liberals hate America. But I mean, think about this. When it comes to progressives, how many of the people do you see on TV saying they want universal health care will also proudly wave the American flag and say this country was founded on great principles that planted the seeds of freedom? They're not going to say those things.
They're not. And think about what we saw happen on Independence Day, you know, coming from Maxine Waters, coming from, you know, Cori Bush, who I don't understand how Cori Bush is in the United States House of Representatives. You got a picture downstairs in your basement of David Dorn.
Yeah, we do.
And that was the police officer that was killed because of the violent protests that Cori Bush led.
Murderous riots.
And now she's sitting in the United States House of Representatives, a member of the House Judiciary Committee. But Cori Bush stood there and said that blacks in America still aren't free. And I'm thinking, okay, I was born in a blacks-only hospital in 1961. How am I not free? But when they continue to spew that rhetoric, and you still have people that buy into it, that listen to it, then they start to believe, yeah, you know, I'm not free. I'm owed something. I need reparations. I need all of these things. And that's why, like I said last time, a show like yours is so important to get this message out, especially to the millennial generation.
In your, I don't want to go too much into this because I want to talk about this in depth, but you showed us your announcement video for governorship, and you included the names of several black men who are like pioneers and founders in Texas of, I think, Texas A&M?
Yeah, State Senator Matthew Gaines, who, former slave, but ended up being a state senator in Texas and co-founded Texas A&M University and Prairie View A&M, G.T. Ruby, Texas State House of Representatives, and then the very first black chairman of the Republican Party of Texas, which was founded by 150 black men, Norris Wright Cooney, a Galveston businessman.
Those men have they prove anybody with hard work can succeed, and they have accomplished more than all of these progressive racist activists will ever accomplish.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And see, what they also prove is that they were not defined by what they were. They were defined by what they would become.
And what they did.
Absolutely.
Their legacy.
That's the legacy.
But you mentioned Cori Bush. There's one other person who also helped lead the charge for these riots. And I want to bring this up because I have a question about this. That person obviously was Kamala Harris.
Yes.
She tweeted out the link to donate to rioters. Who, I mean, some of these people, I'm not going to list their crimes, but there's some very serious crimes some of these rioters had committed. And she just blanket says, we're going to, you know, raise money to bail them out. She said, the Texas House Democrats protest, that's what she calls it, a protest, shows extraordinary courage. So for those that are just tuning in, this is basically the Democrats in Texas are illegally blocking a vote by fleeing the state in private jets to where DC, I think, right?
Yeah.
And Kamala Harris, I wonder if there's like a, is it illegal to encourage someone to commit a crime? Is it, you know, am I going too far by her saying it's just courage? Did she actually encourage them to do it?
Well, that's, we call that being an accessory. and people go to jail for being an accessory. But remember that the Texas Democrats, they did that in the final days of our regular session at the end of May. And they took a trip up here to Washington, D.C. They were met by the vice president, and she called them courageous and all of these things. So this has already been in the books. This was cooked up. You know, we went into a special session last week, Thursday, and for whatever reason, our Speaker of the House down there in Texas put the House on recess. And next thing you know, yeah, they're on recess. They're up here playing around in Washington, D.C.
You know, I feel like when you get to the point where the political parties are engaging in voting instead of policy, like so the goal of the Democrats now is to affect how the vote happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like the last barrier to the system falling apart. Yes. Because it's one thing when you have everyone saying, okay, we agree these are the rules, now let's play the game.
Yeah.
Now you're at the point where you're in the fourth quarter and the other coach is saying, we're going to change the rules. That rule doesn't count. We got to change the rules. Everybody come here. We're changing the rules. We all agree. It's like, no, something's up. If they can't defend themselves on policy, and they're now saying we need to change the voting rules, that sounds like they've got an argument to make.
That sounds like how you lose a country. And when you allow them to take such petulant actions, let's just put it this way. If Republicans were to do this exact same thing, what would be the number one story on LSD, CNN, NBC? What would be the number one
story? It is the story. Republican voter suppression across the country.
Yeah, but that's how they flip it.
Right.
Just the same as when Jen Psaki comes out and says Republicans want to defund the police.
These guys, that was a good one.
Yeah, but these guys are masterful in how they can manipulate language. I mean, all of a sudden they have redefined what infrastructure is.
Yeah.
You know, and so what we've got to do, we've got to get better with that. We've got to have that little strategic, cell that sits down and thinks about where they're going to go and how do we block it.
We got to talk about freedom. The word, the definition, what does it mean?
Because it's an anti-government slogan.
It has apparently now, yeah, screaming freedom in Cuba is anti-government.
It is.
But so we got to define freedom. What is freedom? I don't have the freedom to go next door and rip food out of the guy's refrigerator. I don't have the freedom to throw you guys against the wall. I don't have freedom in that sense. Mm-hmm. We have created restrictions for a society in which we gain certain types of freedom. And so voter restriction in a lot of ways enhances freedom because it creates a restrictive system that works better than just a throw it against the wall and see what sticks type of anarchy freedom where
let's put it this way to help clarify your point. If you had an electrical current go into water, those electrons are just free to mill about.
Yes.
You're not going to solve any equations with it. But if you restrict the flow of those electrons, you can solve complex equations. Mm-hmm. Computers constrict the flow. They restrict. And so I think about this voting stuff, and restriction is a false framing. They're trying to make it seem like Republicans are trying to take away people's rights. Mm. When in actuality, it's about securing the process, which guarantees your rights so that someone can't come in and steal it. Unmatched signature, for every ballot that should have been rejected because it was late or whatever, that comes in, that negates your due diligence, the hard work you did to abide by the rules.
Absolutely. But the thing is that let's put it in a historical context if we want to talk about voting. Who has always been the party that was against voting rights? Who has always been the party that was about voting suppression? Okay, if I remember right, the 14th Amendment, that was Republicans, and that was to give blacks recently freed slaves, which is the reason why the Republican Party was founded. 13th Amendment, which the Democrats voted against. They also voted against the 14th Amendment. They've taken that equal protection under the law clause, and they perverted it. The Democrats were the ones that came up with Jim Crow. So I really do find it kind of laughable when, everyone's saying Jim Crow 2.0. Well, you guys should know about Jim Crow because you started it. Or you talk about the literacy test and the poll tax. When you talk about the Ku Klux Klan, why was the Ku Klux Klan founded? The Ku Klux Klan was founded for voter suppression to keep blacks from being able to go out and vote. The same type of blacks that founded the Republican Party of Texas and those gentlemen who became some early pioneers. And so that's what we have to start doing is saying that, you guys have always been on the side of this historically. When you want to talk about systemic racism, it's you guys.
Oh, they would know. I love that. Yeah. I love how they push the party switched line. It's amazing to me that you have people who don't read the news, don't read history. They read headlines. I know a lot of people from Chicago, people I've known my whole life, and they tweet things like, I'll be talking to them, and they'll say, yeah, well, the party switched. And I go, when? Well, it was a couple decades ago, the Republicans decided to be Democrats. And I was like, why?
You know what?
Yeah. No. They don't have an answer. I mean, certainly there are people who have come up with answers, but it's remarkable to me that by simply telling someone this, they go, got it. And they have no idea what it means. Mm-hmm. They have no idea about the history or the arguments. They just go along with it. And that's what they throw at you when you try
Robert
to point that
Byrd,
out.
You say you're close to West Virginia. Robert Byrd, senator from West Virginia, was always a Democrat. He was also a grand wizard in the Ku Klux Klan. Uh-huh. And he's the exact same guy that who eulogized him at his funeral? Joe Biden.
Yep.
And there's the same Joe Biden who referred to black men as predators. Now, when Joe Biden's standing there in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he's talking about the riots that were there and the murdering of blacks and the destruction of Black Wall Street, he kind of missed this little great historical anecdote that it was the Democrats who did that. Or when you tried to take, you know, Juneteenth, which was the day that blacks found out that they were free down in Texas in 1865, and he tries to say that this is an independence day. Well, you know, they found out that they were free because of a Republican president and Republicans and what they did and the Emancipation Proclamation that was signed by Abraham Lincoln, not because of Democrats. And so they're trying to steal history. And you're right. They just put out the soundbite. And so, yes, the party switch. And people just say, okay. And the more you say that, the more you say that, people start to believe it. But when you anecdotally look at it, think about this, Tim. The longest filibuster in U.S. Senate history. Senate Democrats against the 1964 Civil Rights Act.
And they say that that was around the time the Democrats started switching. But I'd like to play just a little historical game of walking through a brief time through history, starting with what you just said. Democrats filibustering civil rights. Okay. From then, where was it where we were having these police brutality problems? And still to this day, the left says there are police brutality problems. Well, it's New York, it's L.A., it's Chicago. Who runs those cities?
Yeah.
They're not run by Republicans. You look at redlining and blockbusting. Where were those policies implemented? Mm-hmm. Why, that was Chicago. I'm sorry, I thought Chicago has been Democrat since, like, what, the 20s?
The greatest amount of failure is in all of these Democrat cities. The greatest amount of crime, even though they try to say Republicans defunded the police, the greatest amount of black-on-black killing is in cities that are run by Democrats. But yet, I have yet to see, you know, Ms. Patrice Cullors of, you know, Black Lives Matter, the avowed Marxist that has three multimillion-dollar properties. I barely have a house, you know, just, you know, like $450,000. But yet, I've never seen her go to Chicago, Detroit, Atlanta, D.C., Philadelphia, or any of these places.
I got to correct you, though. I think actually she has five houses.
Oh,
but wow. they're not.
Shame
they're,
on me.
But they're only like $500,000 each, and one of them's over $1 million. I could be wrong, though. I think it's five.
Okay. Well, I know there's four. Three that I thought three were multimillion. Maybe the other two kind of bring the value down.
I think what happened was people reported she had a multimillion-dollar house empire.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure a lot of them are like $500,000. But
I thought Marxists were all about, you know, wealth redistribution and
you
and
thought, right?
Spread, you know, how many people live in that house? I mean, shouldn't she have like whole families living in the house with her? You know, it's do as I say, not as I do.
There was a story a while ago. We looked up the data. Washington Post ran the data. The crime per capita and the crime by population. And the funny thing is, when you look at crime by general population, it's like number one is New York. But sure, it's not really fair to look at the top 10 cities and say, who has the most crime? Aha, New York. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, New York's got a massive population. We look at per capita. And the funny thing is, per capita, you actually have to remove some Republican cities, or at the time, Republican mayors, because it's all Democrats. And so the left's response to this is, well, Democrats tend to run bigger cities. And I'm like, that doesn't mean anything.
No.
Why do they tend to run bigger cities? I don't know, but I'll tell you this. If I can grow up in Chicago and you've got Democrats running it for generations and they've not solved these problems of racism and blockbusting and redlining and segregation, when will you be like, we need to stop voting for these people?
Because remember the movie Shawshank Redemption?
Oh, yeah. Great movie.
Love it.
Remember when Brooks, you know, he had been there in the institution for so long, then finally he got to be free. But when they let him out of the institution, he was working at the grocery store. He just could not deal with it because he had become an institutional man.
Yeah.
And so I think that you have gotten this institutional mentality of victimhood, that there are some people that have become so comfortable with Section 8 housing, so comfortable with the drugs and the gangs, so comfortable with waiting for the check to come down. You know, you start to look at a lot of the fast food restaurants and places like that. They're suffering because people are getting paid to stay at home and not work. I think that we have this dependency cycle that is happening. And when you read Alexander Fraser Tytler's, his, you know, Democracy Cannot Exist as a Permanent Form of Government, you read that cycle. The cycle starts with dependence, but then as you go through it, you end up coming right back to dependence. And I think that is what is happening. And one of the critical points is that you get that apathy. And and that's what we see happening here in the United States of America, where people are just comfortable. They're complacent in being a victim. And that's what I, you know, yesterday I opened up CPAC on Sunday. And I said, we got this choice to either be victors or be victims. And what conservatism, what America was founded on, was the individual is a victor.
You know, one thing I think makes everything a bit easier is now that the Democrats have started admitting they're all racists and white supremacists. So you have people like Robin DiAngelo, and you get these TikTok videos where these are all progressive, ultra woke people flat out saying they're racists and white supremacists. And I'm like, thank you for admitting it. We've long suspected it. But I think, you know, as many people have pointed out, it's like the soft bigotry of low expectations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or I think it's, as Carl Benjamin calls it, white supremacists with guilty consciences.
Well, you know, Shelby Steele wrote the book, White Guilt. And all you folks out there, if you haven't read Shelby Steele's book, White Guilt, you should read it. And that's how, I got to tell you, white folks get hoodwinked. Y'all getting hoodwinked, man. I mean, someone comes up to you and says you're a white supremacist or racist, you just say, yeah, get out of here. I mean, stop this. Please don't call me that. I'll do whatever you want. Here's, you know, I'm a corporate CEO. Here's $10 million, Black Lives Matter. Don't talk to me like
that.
Well,
they don't want a brick through their window. They don't want a fire.
Well, you know what? That's why we had a Second Amendment. You throw a brick through my window, something's going to happen.
You know, also, we had Yunmi Park on the show. She's a North Korean. She escaped North Korea, basically.
Was that the one that talked at the school board meeting here?
Ooh, no, maybe. No, that was Asra.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if she talked here, but she's the one fighting at schools.
Yeah.
Yunmi was a North Korean defector.
And she was saying how freedom is terrifying, hard, and scary, and she almost went back to North Korea when she had finally received freedom for the first time, because she didn't know what to make. She didn't want to make the wrong decision, and she was so used to being told what to do. So I think these people that are institutionalized have a similar life experience where, you know, the opportunity of freedom is you could destroy it all.
You got to grab it yourself.
They will vote to maintain those institutions.
Yes.
And the Democrats, I think, are trying to not necessarily – I don't think it's as overt, but I think it's a pressure. They're applying a certain pressure so that in a long enough amount of time, they will generate more institutionalized voters. So I think what's interesting is there's long been this trope that Democrats want Hispanic voters, and they're going to bring in illegal immigrants because they want to give them they're going to give them a path to citizenship. The interesting thing is that when you see in South Texas how the Hispanic areas actually voted Republican.
We've done an incredible job of flipping the Rio Grande Valley. For the first time in 36 years, we have a Republican mayor down in the Rio Grande Valley. We have a 19-year-old city council member, Roman Garcia, in Kerrville, Texas. But you just brought up a great point. And this, you know, I'm not really smart. The Army teaches you to carry 3x5 cars with all your notes.
That is
you
smart.
Refer back to. But I want to share this quote with you all and with the audience. The uncontested absurdities of today are the accepted slogans of tomorrow. They come to be accepted by degrees, by dint of constant pressure on one side and constant retreat on the other, until one day when they are suddenly declared to be the country's official ideology.
You know,
Ayn Rand.
It's brilliant. It is brilliant because I tweeted about this today. There's a video that I saw Cassandra Fairbanks tweeted in response to some video. It was one of the most absurd things I've ever seen. A guy takes a coffee maker and he pours
I saw that.
He pours lemonade in the back. He puts broccoli where the coffee is supposed to go, and he puts a salmon fillet in the coffee pitcher or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then he turns it on. He says, "This is totally legit. The lemonade will steam the broccoli and then cook the salmon in 7 minutes." The video is absurd. Absolutely absurd. There's other videos where a woman is pouring nachos all over her counter, and it's a disgusting mess. She does the same thing with spaghetti. There's videos where people throw burgers and fries in a blender and then freeze it and make patties out of it. It is nonsense content meant to shock people to get shares. You see the guy pouring lemonade on salmon in a coffee maker, and he says, "Sunny D." And you're like, "That's disgusting. I need to show my friends how disgusting this is." Here's the problem. Little kids, they're going to see that, and they're not going to know that it's meant to manipulate you.
Yeah.
Because they're going to see a very serious-looking man very seriously saying, "Watch me cook salmon this way." They're going to grow up with that. And then when they're older, they're going to be taking a steam iron and ironing their Eggo waffle while filming themselves with an animal face filter. And it'll be pure insanity mm-hmm. because they, you know, we're older. We understand you don't cook. It's not convenient to cook salmon in a coffee maker. That's stupid.
Yeah.
But these kids don't know that. Now check this out. Here's where it gets a bit more, damning. At the end of the 2000s, something most of you who listen to this show have heard quite a lot, but it plays into this, especially with that Ayn Rand quote. Blogs realized that rage was getting the most shares.
Yes.
So what they started doing was they started saying racism, racism, sexism, racism. Then they realized combining them got them even more shares. Mm-hmm. You had kids who were 10 years old in 2008. They're not very politically active. They go on Facebook and they see nothing but police brutality, nothing but posts about evil racism of America. And they've been living in that their entire adult lives. Now it's no surprise they believe all this woke insanity. They believe all this psychotic garbage because it's been their entire life of people just posting manipulative content. So to go to that quote, those absurdities have become the slogans yeah. of these young people who are now in their 20s and voting in. I love it. We actually have some of these leftists sit here and tell us Joe Biden is the right path towards avoiding corruption. And I'm like, you don't know anything about the Obama administration at all, do you?
No.
The National Defense Authorization Act, indefinite detention provisions. How about Biden, Inc., putting his brother in charge of Iraqi construction? All of a sudden, the family's making millions of dollars. The Burisma deals, the investigations, China. They ignore all China. Oh, flying on the plane. I mean, come on. I said this before. I'll say it again. And then we'll segue to what I wanted to talk about before I got derailed. If the Republicans win the House back, they should impeach Joe Biden on all of the evidence pertaining to.
But they won't do that, Tim.
Of course they won't.
They will not do that because they believe we're gentlemanly. We're above that because this is a dogfight. This is beyond a knife fight. And, you know, I had a dear friend of mine, a Marine, retired first sergeant by the name of Jim Reifinger. And he said, if you ever find yourself in a fair fight, it's all because your tactics suck. and we continue to want to have this fair fight. We continue to want to. There's a great scene from Officer and a Gentleman when David Caruso is standing there in front of Louis Gossett Jr. And they're going to start doing the training on hand-to-hand combat. And he's going to use David Caruso, the cadet, as his example. And, you know, David Caruso, well, this cadet knows by regulation, drill sergeant, you're not allowed to strike me or anything like really? And Lou Gossett puts him down into a chokehold.
Yeah.
And that's what Republicans are. Republicans stand there, and if you read Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, you know one of the rules are to constrain your enemy into their own principles and values. And so that comes back to what is happening at the border. You have a federal government that has completely abdicated its constitutional duty to protect the sovereignty of the state of Texas and the United States of America. And we're sitting around talking about, well, we really can't do anything about it because we don't have the ability as a state. The Constitution says that you can protect yourself when the federal government abdicates their duty.
This is interesting because the way you're describing it, it sounds very much like the old trope of the Revolutionary War. The Crown was very much looking for a regimented battle on the, on the standard front.
We didn't play that way. We didn't play, and you know, I was watching Last of the Mohicans. That's why I was loving. I was loving your little flintlock pistol, and you're right. I mean, you know, we were the original guerrilla warriors here in North America.
We wanted to win.
We wanted to win.
It was because you know, I was talking to some Occupy activists back in the day, and they were talking. They were talking about something. I can't remember what it was, but I said, "Do you think that the Ninja Warrior would walk to the front gate and then?" Challenge the war.
Hello.
Your Imperial Guards, I must defeat you. Then I can go into the feudal lord's room. No, they snuck around back.
Yeah.
They set traps. They threw, what were they called?
Smoke stars.
Makibishi, is that what they're called?
They spent years Caltrops. Preparing.
Yeah, they
getting close to their
they would
target.
Do? They would go in the dead of night and they would put wooden posts in lakes so that when they, after they assassinate a feudal lord, they would run on the posts on the water and mm-hmm. people would think they were walking on water. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They wanted to create this illusion. It was all pre-planned. They did not fight by the rules. I watched this amazing fight on YouTube a long time ago of a samurai versus a ninja. And it was incredible because the samurai is fighting with honor and he's swinging and he's regimented. And then the ninja pulls powder, like chalk, out of his, you know, out of his kimono or whatever it's called and throws it in the guy's face.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, they don't care about your rules or your honor. They want to win. Because in the end, whoever wins is the one who's going to walk away and control things. So that's the problem with Republicans. They look at everything like, oh, you know, we believe in the free speech of the left and their right to speak and we'll defend it. And they go, thank you so much, Bannum.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's one of the issues that we had down in Texas was you know, we have control of the Texas State House, 83 to 67, and we have the speaker there. And I wrote a little piece that said, please do not give Democrats committee chair positions. And guess what they ended up doing? They gave Democrats 15 committee chair positions.
Wow.
The same Democrats that guess where they are now. They're up here in Washington, D.C., blocking election integrity again after flying private jets up,
you know,
up here.
I think you've got Matt Gaetz, Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene. They're fighters. They're feisty. And then you got, you know, Ted Cruz is pretty good. Holly's pretty good. And Rand Paul's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of feistiness, you know, you got very, very few, if any, Republicans. But I'll tell you this, Democrats, man, they literally defended rioters who burned down buildings and tried to bail out the people.
You have a rioter that resulted in the death of someone that is a member of Congress.
Who? What happened?
Cori Bush. She led the violent riot that ended up with the death of David Dorn, the picture that you have down in your basement. But she also led the riot against Patty and Mark McCloskey in their homes.
Yeah.
And now she's sitting on the House Judiciary Committee. Now, but yet, if you are a Republican and you say something that the Democrats don't like, what does Nancy Pelosi do? Strips you of your committee assignments.
What does Kevin McCarthy do?
Well, that's the problem.
Agree. And they and look, there's good and there's bad here. Because when Steve King came out and said some, you know, something about white nationalism on Twitter in a positive light, the Republicans had no problem saying, we don't want none of that.
Yeah.
You get out of here.
That's right and wrong.
Right.
But what we have to also do is look at the other side and say, really? Maxine Waters can stand up and encourage people to commit acts of violence against Republicans or members of this administration?
During a criminal trial in Minnesota?
Yes.
And say, we're going to do more unless we get what we want?
Yeah.
I mean, that is shocking.
And nothing happens.
It's like civil disobedience, but it's a little different. Like, I mean, telling people to sit on a road and block traffic, you could say that's violent because you're impeding and disrupting people's daily lives, so that's a form of violence.
But telling people to
burn buildings is different than telling people to revolt against the system peacefully.
Well, violence is causing harm to someone or something.
Gerald Nadler, who is the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, when he was asked about Antifa, he said, it's just a myth. Really? So in other words, you're consenting, you're condoning it.
It's called terrorism.
Yes.
When Maxine Waters showed up and said, unless we get the verdict that, you know, is right, we're going to be out here, we're going to push harder, we're going to do more. I mean, we all know what happened in Minnesota the last time. We all know what happened with you have like 23 plus deaths or whatever directly associated with the riots and then some peripheral deaths. And she says she wants more. The people of that city knew exactly what was going to happen. They said so in interviews after the fact. I was scared these people would show up at my house. That's terrorism.
That is terrorism. Or, you know, let's put it out there. The only person that lost their life on January the 6th was shot in the back by a Capitol Hill police officer.
She was shot in the front somewhere in the neck or shoulder.
But we still don't know who the Capitol Hill police officer is. Now, if that was on the left, they'd be going apoplectic right now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, let's talk about what's going on with the border, though.
Yeah.
We were talking about, you said that the Biden administration abdicated in terms of border policy. How exactly
would
you describe it?
You have a constitutional duty to protect the sovereignty of the United States of America and the sovereignty of a state that has a 1,200-mile border. So when you come in by executive order, not by legislative process, which first and foremost is unconstitutional, to say that we're going to implement an open borders policy and just allow illegals to flow right through. Well, the Constitution says, Article 1, Section 10, Clause Number 3, and Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, the Founding Fathers referred to it as an invasion. That's exactly what has happened. You saw the video of me down on the Rio Grande River a week ago, 2 a.m. in the morning. A guy shouts across from Mexico, I've got 80 ready to cross. And guess
just
fares them across.
We've got a few really interesting developments. One is, I think, what do we have, Florida sending troopers to Texas?
Yeah, but see, the thing is, Tim, we have a National Guard
in
Texas, 19 to 20,000 strong. You mobilize your full National Guard. You put them down there to show that this is a deterrent. You make sure that you block the infiltration routes, because what is happening is that we're focusing on those crossing points where the women and children are being funneled across, but what we saw when we were down up the river, you could see the flickering lights. And I put on the night vision goggles, and you saw the other folks coming across.
Yeah, now we're talking.
Those are the getaways.
Well, let's talk about one of the other developments, too. There are some states sending in troops or National Guardsmen, but we have this story.
But what powers do they have?
it depends on what the state, Texas is going to allow them to do, right?
Well, that's right. What I'm saying, they're not allowing them to do anything because right. guess what I saw? I saw National Guard troops watching those people come across and helping them out of the rafts into Texas.
Is that well, Texas wait, National Guard let's, or Federal National Guard?
No, it's Texas National Guard.
But we do have a story I want to pull up.
Yep.
This is from TimCast.com, and for those that are wondering, this is the alpha version of the site, which is alpha, mind you, but it still looks so really, good. Really cool. Texas sheriffs sue Biden admin for restricting ICE amid border crisis.
Yes.
So it sounds like it's not just that they're not doing anything. They're actively hindering.
They are.
The attempts.
They have told Customs and Border Patrol, they are telling ICE, do not do your job. ICE is there to deport people, and ICE is being told, don't do your job. Don't deport people. So what are these constitutional officers? That's the interesting thing, the difference between a sheriff and a local municipality police officer. Sheriffs are constitutional officers. And so they're standing up and saying that you are obstructing my duties as a constitutional officer because you are allowing these people or telling these people not to do their job. And so therefore they're bringing a lawsuit against the administration.
The allegations are scarier than just that. Check this out from the article. Mm-hmm. According to the lawsuit, the Biden administration's February 18th memorandum has blocked ICE officers from taking illegal immigrants into custody who have committed crimes like human trafficking.
Yeah.
They say, quote, since the issuance of the February 18th memorandum, ICE officers have been unable to take custody of or issue detainer requests for dangerous criminal aliens whose detention is mandated by the Immigration and Nationality Act. Specifically, detention is required for aliens who have committed or been convicted of numerous crimes other than aggravated felonies, such as crimes of moral turpitude, crimes involving controlled substances, human trafficking, money laundering, and certain firearms offenses. Now, that's amazing. I mean,
and look, sexual assault.
If Biden was going to say something like, we're helping refugees, go ahead and arrest all those guys, I'd be like, oh, those Democrats trying to find some way. This is like, the human traffickers, let them go.
Yeah, well, that's what I saw happen. You saw the human smugglers that were the ones pulling the rafts, because at that point in Roma, Texas, the Rio Grande is about waist deep. They were pulling the rafts across, and they continued to do it until all of those folks were ferried across. Tim, we have had people from 160 different countries detained. Now, those are the ones we detained, not the ones that got away. We have people that are on terrorist watch lists. In the Del Rio sector, they've detained people from 72 different countries. This is a national security issue that is happening down on our border, and it's going to affect what is happening not just in Texas but all across the United States of America. We're not even talking about the fentanyl that is coming across.
Wow. You know what it is? It's really simple. We were talking about H.R. 1 earlier. You know what? There's something else in H.R. 1 we didn't bring up, and that's they want to lower the voting age.
Yes.
Why would they want to get people with no experience in politics or national affairs to be voting?
Just what you said. They just bombard them with the headlines, and then they go out and they vote for them.
I was covering a story a couple of years ago during the migrant caravan crisis. And you get the standard line from the left about refugees and things like that. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and I sent I sent them some documents. They blocked me. And it was a story showing how a family flew from Africa into Brazil, and they spent thousands. It was like $4,000 total to fly their family from Africa to Brazil, and then thousands more to bring them from Brazil up to the southern Mexican border. Mm-hmm. And the reason they did it was they knew if they flew to the U.S., they would be denied. Because actually going through a checkpoint, you'd get turned around.
Yep.
But if they came through the porous southern border, especially at the time of a caravan, they might get through. And so I asked them, if these people were refugees fleeing Africa, Brazil is amazing. I've been to Rio and Sao Paulo. I absolutely loved Rio. Great food, great people on the beach, coconuts for a buck, super cheap. Why would you spend thousands of dollars to leave a place where you're already safe? And I'll tell you this, probably because you got Bolsonaro down there who's not playing games.
Yep.
And they knew the Democrats would probably give them a free pass.
Well, look at what has happened.
And America is awesome, by the way.
America is awesome. And so the president of Mexico and the president of Guatemala both have said, and the president of Guatemala said it directly to Kamala Harris, you guys caused this problem. You know, the policies were in place that kept this under control. Then you come in and change the policies, and now you have this flood. So don't come down here, you know, talking about this issue. You know, and going down saying, well, it's climate change. That family did not leave Africa because of the weather. Okay? All right?
Yeah, no. And you ask them, they don't say that. This is the funniest thing. They say, you know, I love that line from AOC when she was questioning, I think, Homan was his name?
Yeah, Tom Homan. Tom Homan.
And she's like, legal asylees have broken no laws. And then he just names the laws like, actually, they violated something. Just gives it really dry. But these people say they're legal asylees. And they mention the climate change thing. Kamala Harris, like, it's because of climate change. Did you ask him? One person interviewed, I think this was by a French news outlet, I think it was AFP, said, I miss Buffalo Wild Wings. Pretty sure that ain't climate change.
No, that ain't climate change.
I got to be honest. I miss B-dubs, too.
I don't know. But you know, Buffalo Wild Wings, if you get the really hot, spicy ones, you do get hot and whatever. So maybe it is all about climate change. Yeah, it's very traumatic.
Look. This person was in Mexico in the caravan, and they were interviewed. Vox.com, V-O-X, cover this, that they said, I miss Buffalo Wild Wings. I just busted out laughing because I'm like, I feel you. Like, I love me some B-dubs, but Mexico City has B-dubs.
Yeah.
So what you're saying still makes no sense.
But think about this also. This is all about, you know, coming to seek asylum, and they're living in poverty, and, you know, they're being threatened by gangs or whatever. Then most people out of Chicago or any of these other inner cities that, you know, the left is running, then they should seek asylum somewhere, too.
Yeah. Oh, no joke, man. I'm not even playing. On the south side of Chicago, there was one kid who went to prison. He was 13. Gang said, you got to shoot him or else. And so he's like, he did it. And then the reason they do that is because the kids get out when they're 18. The adults would go for life, 25 absolutely. To life. So they have the kids do it. Yeah, absolutely those kids need support. Oh, what's that? Who's running Chicago and who has been running Chicago? It's been under Democrat one-party control forever.
But the problem in Chicago, according to Mayor Lori Lightfoot, is the stuff that's coming over from Indiana.
That's an excuse.
Well, of course it is, but that's what they are all about. And we allow them to get away with it. And so this is not... You know, I've just been doing some reading about remittances that are being sent back out of the United States by illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. When you look at the Northern Triangle countries, you're talking about $36 billion a year that are going back. Now, when you expand that out to the top seven countries, $77 billion leaving the United States of America going back. Wouldn't it be great if we just taxed these remittances? Let's just tax it at the highest income tax rate that the Democrats want so the illegal immigrants can give their fair share.
What's a remittance? Yeah. What is that exactly?
This is the money that they send back to their native countries.
Oh, so they come here illegally, they work, and they send money out?
And they send money out.
Okay.
You know, with no, you know, penalties whatsoever.
And often no taxes because they make money under the table.
Absolutely.
And it's a very serious problem. So when you look at places like Detroit where they've lost a lot of jobs, money leaving an area is bad for that area. Because you're taking away a trade medium, it causes all sorts of problems, especially when it's done abruptly. For people to come in, they are effectively extracting value from this country. It's the same problem. It's a very similar problem to when we outsource a lot of our jobs overseas.
Absolutely.
Money will be spent by you, Ian, on a brand new fancy watch at a local store, and that money is instantly internationally transferred to another country, be it through the business owner, or in the instance of this with the remittances, people working there will get paid and then send the money out of the country.
Not to mention the depression of wages, so that in the inner city communities, you know, these, you know, young teenagers, black, Hispanic, they don't have the opportunity to get these jobs because they're going to someone that is here illegally. So it is a vicious cycle that we're creating in our country.
I feel like we got to define the word refugee right now, because if someone's really fleeing terror, then I think we have a duty to house them at the very least. But if someone's mean to you, it says mean words, that you're not a victim.
Well, they're coached. They're coached what to say. And if you follow the money trail, there are a lot of leftist lawyers that are going into these countries, and they're giving them the talking points. And the interesting thing, guys, is that they will go and surrender to they know who the federal Border Patrol agent is. That's who they surrender to. They're not going to surrender to local law enforcement because they know local law enforcement will detain them, arrest them, what have you. And so they know how to game this entire system. It's just like when you're in a combat zone, you tell the enemy, here's my rules of engagement. This is what I can and can't do. Mm. And then guess what they do? They understand the gaps by which they exploit you. Same thing's happening here.
You saw the story when the Biden administration was smuggling children into other states in the dead of night. You see that story?
Yeah, Tennessee. That's landing in the middle of the night.
That is, very simply put, the Biden administration engaging in human trafficking.
They are. And to the point where the cartels, this number is going to blow your socks off. The cartels are making, on average, $25 million a week.
Wow.
Holy cow.
And I saw the little wristbands. Each one of the cartels has a different wristband because they're the ones that are allowing you transit through their respective territories. Mm. And, you know, the adults, the kids, they all have the wristband from the cartel that is bringing them across. And even though they're not able to pay this money, guess what? When they get on this side, they have cartel operatives. They're going to be working for the cartels and sending that money back. If we are serious about this, we must declare the cartels criminal and terrorist organizations, and then we go after their financing and resourcing.
I just got to make sure I pull this up because this is a bold thing to say, but yes, it is true. A video was released showing Biden admin secretly flying migrant children into Tennessee.
Yep.
While Republican rep urges Congress to pull Kamala's travel funds until she visits the border. So this is a story from May, mm-hmm. and it wasn't just Tennessee. Now, you got to understand, when you are secretly and in violation of the law, taking humans and transporting them, you are smuggling people.
Literally.
That's human smuggling operation by the Biden.
Human trafficking.
Human trafficking.
So the Biden administration is engaged in human trafficking. The Biden administration is creating the largest economic boom for the criminal and terrorist cartels.
What would you do?
Go ahead.
Like, as governor of Texas, what can you do with the federal government acting as the way it is? Like, what are some processes?
You look at the 10th Amendment, and you assert your power as a sovereign state.
Yep.
You look at those two clauses that I just mentioned in the Constitution. You have a full mobilization of your National Guard. You start to tax the remittances that are coming out of Texas, you know, with illegal immigrants, and that's how you build a border security fund. You also designate those cartels as criminal and terrorist organizations. So you go after the banks that are, you know, funneling and laundering their money. You go after these stash houses. You go after real estate agents and agencies and the banks that are supporting these stash houses. This is an intricate system that you've got to peel the layers of the onion back. But the most important thing, you've got to go after those resources. And the other thing is you've got to stop with the magnets. If you come into Texas, you're not getting free taxpayer benefits in Texas. You're not getting in-state tuition as illegal in Texas. And so it's those type of things that we have to use as a physical deterrent and then also economic deterrents.
Well, what kind of resistance would you foresee from the federal government?
The federal government that's a great point. Because, see, that comes back to exactly what we said. Republicans always put themselves in a box that says, well, we've got to get the permission from the federal government. It was free and independent states that created the federal government. And so when you understand federalism, when you understand your duty as a sovereign state, you don't sit back and you wait for the mother may I from the federal government. You have a duty and responsibility as a governor to protect the citizens in your state. And right now, the citizens of the state of Texas are not being protected. I know everyone's saying, well, we're going to build a wall. There's 1,200 miles that we share with a foreign nation. There's only 145 miles of wall that's been built. How long do you think it's going to take us to build another 1,055 miles of a border wall, which the Trump administration estimated at $10 to $12 billion, and we've only said that we're going to allocate $250 million?
Well, to be fair, I heard a story that Trump actually proposed moats full of alligators. Oh. That was actually reported. Clearly Trump...
Another headline.
Exactly. They said somebody somewhere made a claim that Trump wanted moats full of alligators. And that's actually more expensive. Yeah, digging a trench and filling it with water and alligators?
You got to feed those alligators, too.
Plus, the Rio Grande's already there.
It's already there. I mean, you already have a physical, you know, barrier, a border, a river. But if you're not putting anyone down there as a physical deterrent, then it's just a crossing point. And so you get to watch, as, you know, on our website, the video of guys just ferrying people across.
These videos are crazy. You watch them. We've had a lot of reporters we've had on this show have been down there, and it's the most insane thing to see a residential neighborhood, and then all of a sudden you'll see 15 dudes just run full speed, yeah. And then like border guards chasing after them.
High speed car chases, carjackings have increased, ransacking of grocery stores and convenience stores. These are the type of these aren't asylum seekers.
What? I believe this is, I'm getting this right, but do you know the most dangerous cities in Mexico and where they are?
It's right along the border.
Yep. Just south of the U.S. border.
You have right now going on, and this is going to explode pretty soon, there is a cartel internal turf battle, turf war. And these guys are gearing up. Because there are certain cartels that want to expand the drug trade, fentanyl and what have you. There are certain cartels that are only in the human and sex trafficking, and there are certain cartels that want to bring all of that together under their control. There are some incredible videos that show some of the massacres and so how some of these bodies are just laying out in the streets all over the place. You can go down and you can be on our side of the board and you can hear the gunshots. It reminds me, Iraq, Afghanistan, you can see the flashes. This is what's happening just on the other side. And I guarantee you, if they are having an internal border fight between the cartels on the south side of the border, that's going to spill over to our side of the border.
And there are people who have houses just like right there.
Right there.
Right down the border.
They live in terror every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about this, Ian. If you know that a cartel member is going to come up to you and say, if you say something, we'll kill you.
My first thought would be to move. My first thought would be say,
but where are you going to go?
Yeah.
Who's going to buy your house?
I don't know. I mean, that would be my life's goal at that point. Would be first, head down, don't say anything that gets me killed, and then second, I got to get out of here.
But see, this is America. And just imagine, okay, this is no different from ISIS and the Taliban operating, and we're allowing them free reign and free control of our border control.
How do we stop it?
Well, hold on. What do you think would happen if one of these guys in these houses took a weapon, saw one of these cartel members, and fired on him, killed him? What do you think would happen to that
person? Oh, you know what's going to happen. Was he armed? Was an unarmed person? How do you know he was a cartel member? What have you? And that's why I said we have got to designate them as a criminal and terrorist organization. And if you are working with the cartels, that's a felony offense. You're going to jail and you ain't going to see daylight.
Didn't, what was it, Fast and Furious? Weren't they working with Obama's administration was working with cartels to run guns into the U.S.?
Well, I mean, absolutely. Because what they wanted, and Brian Terry, the Border Patrol agent, lost his life because of that gun running scheme. Now, of course, if you say Fast and Furious to most millennials out there, they're going to think of Vin Diesel.
Yeah, how convenient.
Okay.
Good job, government.
Yeah.
Way to mask your
behavior. wanted to track the weapons, how they were moving. And they gave weapons. I almost just don't believe they were that stupid. Mm. Let's give guns to all these people. That'll help us stop them.
No, yeah, that's what they did with ISIS,
But what they really wanted to do was they wanted to say that we've got a gun problem in the United States of America because we have straw dealers that are selling guns. Not the government. We're going to try to create the straw man and say the gun distributors and manufacturers doing it. And then we can therefore shut down the gun manufacturing industry here in the United States of America. But look, what the Obama administration did with Fast and Furious was the exact same thing the Obama administration was doing in the Middle East. In Syria and then also in Libya. I mean, the whole thing that happened in Benghazi was because we were trying to negotiate and get weapons back from the folks that we had supported, Islamic jihadists, against Gaddafi, and we were going to send those weapons into Syria.
Yeah, the U.S. has a problem with kind of doing that, you know. Mm. Mujahideen, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. We don't have a good track record of picking folks.
Hussein's Ba'ath Party, we disbanded the Ba'ath Party, and then they all became Al-Qaeda, basically. Or was it ISIS? I don't remember.
At first, it was the Fedayeen, and then it became Al-Qaeda in Iraq. I was there.
And then ISIS?
ISIS came when you create a void, much the same as we are doing now in Afghanistan. If you create a void, basic law of physics, someone's going to fill that void. And so if you had just left a residual force, kind of like a strike force, to keep the other side at bay, not worrying about democratic institutions or what have you. And so ISIS came in, and we knew about it. As a matter of fact, al-Baghdadi was once in our custody there, and he was released.
And was that under Obama?
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah,
it seems like Obama didn't really have the desire to end ISIS.
He didn't have the desire to do anything.
Yeah.
And Joe Biden is stepping in and doing the exact same thing. And so you're going to see an incredible bloodbath in Afghanistan, just as you saw in Iraq, just the same as you saw in Vietnam. Remember the killing fields of Pol Pot?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Exact same thing is going to happen. I've already had a couple of my former interpreter translators in Afghanistan ask me for letters of recommendation so they can get out. But you know what's the interesting thing? They could probably get to the United States of America quicker if they could pay to go down to Brazil and come up, you know, through our poor southern border, than to try to go to the embassy and get them to do the right thing for these young men and young women who helped us as interpreters and translators and getting them out of Afghanistan. They are truly under attack, and they will be killed by the Taliban, by ISIS, or whoever comes back into power. And guess who also is moving into Afghanistan now that we have precipitously left? China.
Oh, I've heard that.
China's taken over
Belt and Road Initiative.
Yeah.
But Trump wanted to leave earlier. Trump's initial deadline was May, and Biden pushed it back a little
bit. Yeah, but see, the thing is that anyone will tell you all you have to do is leave a small residual force to keep the other side at bay. Leave a small special forces type of force that can make sure that they'll come in and once again reestablish the sanctuary.
I think, you know, we had Sean Parnell on the show, and that's ultimately where we came to, where he was saying, we can't stay there forever. The United States can't just be sitting in this country, but a small team, something to do exactly what you're
Absolutely.
Saying.
Absolutely. I mean, we're not talking about leaving a large million-man force like we did in Germany for, 50 or 60 years. But if you leave, you know, the quick strike force, like I say, with the special operators that can go and target certain key individuals and keep the other side at bay, that's all you need.
It's mistakes after mistakes, you know. We shouldn't have been in there in the first place for a lot of reasons.
The thing is, we had to go in initially, but what happens is that you lose focus. You become an army of occupation instead of army that is enemy-oriented. And you go in, you start to worry about building roads, building institutions, and all of those things. That's not what you're there for. You're supposed to find bad guys and kill bad guys. That's all that's needed.
And now where are they going? Syria?
Who, the bad guys?
No. Biden's moving troops. Well,
who knows? Who knows? I don't think he knows.
I agree. And I don't think that the resource, I don't think the Biden administration is going to be too focused on helping Americans. I think it's going to be more of what we see with many other presidents focusing on foreign policy and kind of disregarding what Americans need in this country. Notably,
of course,
our own border security seems to be a mess. And they're...
Well, it's just the same as the pipeline. You know, Joe Biden comes in and shuts down oil and gas production and pipelines, being at Alaska, being Keystone, being at fracking in Texas. But yet he says to Vladimir Putin, go right ahead.
Nord Stream 2.
Absolutely.
We'll retract the sanctions on Nord Stream 2, build your pipeline.
Yeah.
As for us in the U.S., we'll shut them down. And it's remarkable because they're putting pressure on a pipeline in Michigan that goes to Canada. Canada is outraged over what they're doing.
Absolutely.
It's we're breaking contracts with them. And it's remarkable that we had... The crisis we had in Texas with the freezing.
Oh, man. If we can talk about that.
Oh, yeah. But you also had the Colonial Pipeline hack.
Yes.
Now is not the time to be hurting American energy independence.
No, it's not the time to be hurting American energy.
Never is, really.
No, it's not. And now is not the time to be talking about the Green New Deal and all of these type of things. Because what happened in Texas was that 26% of our energy distribution plan was in wind and solar. About 23% wind, 3% in solar. And what happened we knew this was coming 10 days out. Well, the wind turbines froze and the solar panels froze over. And so all of a sudden, what was supposed to be 26% of your energy distribution plan dropped down to 3%. And there was no backup because no one had done any winterization checks on a lot of the natural gas plants. And we had shut down a lot of the coal fire plants, which we can look at clean coal to be burned out there.
That was the big
and
failure. Was they didn't do winterization.
They didn't do the winterization. Which, yep. No preventative maintenance checks and services.
And you know what my bet is? Just my opinion. I haven't looked into it, but I'm willing to bet.
Climate change.
The people who are building that those wind turbines were probably like, we don't need to worry about freezing. This is Texas.
The climate never changes.
Well,
yeah, we're good.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is that we heavily subsidize those systems. And look, in a free market system, if you want to be a reliable energy source, stand up on your own.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of wind, solar, but we don't have the technological, we don't have the efficiency for one.
Not yet.
To go as big as they're going. Now, some countries have gone really, really big with wind, but people don't understand is that you have to subsidize a lot of it, or you have to get energy elsewhere because there's not always wind. You know what I mean? And the challenge is batteries, transportation. And so it's not so simple. And one of the things, there was somebody who posted this on Facebook. They were like, they said something ridiculous, like the reason we're not getting rid of fossil fuels is because the Democrats and the Republicans are beholden to massive corporations and they just want to make money. And I responded with, the real reason we're not getting rid of fossil fuels is that the energy return on energy invested for everything else except for nuclear doesn't provide enough energy. The amount of energy going into these systems that are like, that's not petroleum, save nuclear, isn't enough.
And the other thing is that even with the green systems, the wind and the solar, guess what you use to push it through the system? Natural gas.
And people really don't understand how much petroleum is used to build solar and wind.
And also in this.
And all the plastics, petrochemicals.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of petroleum to even build. And so the question I'm asking people is, look, I love the idea of renewable energies. Geothermal, tidal energy. Ever hear of tidal energy?
Yeah. There's
tidal
different ways to utilize
that. Mm-hmm. Is reliable. The tide comes in, tide goes out, and you capture some of that energy. The problem is, how much petroleum do you use to build those systems?
Absolutely.
And how long will it take to pay back and offset that carbon? And will you actually produce enough in the long run? Will the device last long enough? In a lot of circumstances, the answer is no. Producing solar, for instance, not necessarily efficient enough right now.
Yep.
There's a lot of cool things we've done with mirrors on those saltwater vats to produce steam energy. There's smart things we're doing.
But it's not going to get
But they're blocking there. Nuclear power.
Yeah.
It's like you've got a clean solution with a massive energy return, and they're like, nah, not that one. Because, you know, they don't care about the climate. They care about power.
Absolutely. And control.
Yep.
That's it.
You know, man, let's we were talking about the Middle East, and we have another story which I find fascinating, is the mayor of Miami has asked for a U.S.-led intervention into Cuba. Did you hear this?
No, I didn't. But I think the last time we tried that, it was something to do with pork. Bay of pigs.
Pigs.
Oh,
right.
Man.
Yeah.
John well, Kennedy. So we got these big protests erupting in Cuba. I love this one. They're yelling freedom, down with dictatorship. And what does the media say? Protesting lack of COVID resources and vaccines and things like that.
Well, of course, they have to spin this because remember, it was Barack Obama down there with the Castros at a baseball game, and he also took a big picture in front of a mural of Che Guevara, one of the most bloodthirsty revolutionaries ever.
Yeah, super racist, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Homophobic.
And so they can't say that people want freedom, people want liberty. No, it's about COVID. They don't have enough masks. They need more vaccines.
You see, they said, New York Times said freedom and other anti-government slogans.
Isn't that incredible?
But I do think that's funny because I think from a libertarian perspective, you get it, especially an anti-communist perspective.
Yeah
saying freedom in Cuba is anti-government.
And see, the thing is that just the same as we saw in the Rio Grande Valley in Texas, where Hispanics want safety and security. They don't want defunding the police. They want their principles and values are conservative. You're going to lose just the same as what happened in the last election cycle. The Cuban community, that Hispanic community down in South Florida, the Venezuelan expatriates, the Cuban expatriates, they went heavily for Donald Trump. Guess what's going to happen this time? They're going to go even more so in the next election.
And now here's why. You're familiar with the Democratic Socialists of America?
Yes.
So the Democratic Socialists of America International Committee tweeted out in support of the Cuban communist regime.
What?
Now here's the best part. It confused a lot of people because they don't understand the language of communists.
Yeah.
They tweeted, DSA stands with the Cuban people and their revolution in this moment of unrest. End the blockade. What you need to understand about the communists is that they call their government the revolution. For instance, when I was in Venezuela, they said Tim Pool was sent here to destabilize the revolution. They call their communist government the revolution. Mm-hmm. So when they tweet this out saying they stand with the people and their revolution, what did the president of Cuba just say? He said he was calling on the revolutionary citizenry to fight back against the protesters. This is the Democratic Socialists of America International Committee with a pinned tweet saying they support the communist regime. Here's the best part. AOC, as most of you know, is a card-carrying member of the Democratic Socialists of America. A lot of people are pointing out that Bernie, AOC, the squad aren't criticizing the Cuban regime right now.
Of course.
So what do you think's going to happen? You saw what happened in that Democrat district in 2020 in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
It was a safe Democrat district. They predicted it was going to swing, you know, what was it, like 15 points or whatever. Democrat went hard red. Republican won, and everyone kind of threw up, all the Democrats threw up in their mouths like, how did this happen? It's because these people who live in Florida know exactly what's going on in Cuba and exactly what these promises really mean. There was one viral video from a Venezuelan a year or so ago, where she was like, everything the DSA, AOC, and Bernie Sanders have promised you is exactly what they told us in Venezuela. And now we're starving. Our industries are collapsing. Crime is skyrocketing. Once the most prosperous nation in South America, now it's just the
shell of a cell.
Murder. More murder than any other.
How did it start? What did one of the first things that Hugo Chavez did? He banned private gun ownership.
Oh, wow.
Always.
Oh, yeah. Never let him.
Always.
That's where it starts. You know, you can Bolshevik Revolution, you know, in China with Chairman Mao, wherever you go. And it's always interesting how the left, you know, it was the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or it's the Democratic German Republic and things of this nation. They always try to use that democratic word, but yet they are the progressive socialists. They are the statists. They are the communists. They are the Marxists. And we've got to get smarter about that. But think about this also. When Hamas was raining down rockets all over Israel, you had, you know, the members of the squad and others in the Democrat Party condemning Israel. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to come a time when people, they're our best advertisement. I guess that's what I want to say. And all we've got to do is voices like you all's here and others just continue to say this. Just the same as they have that constant pressure, instead of the constant retreat on our side, we have to match it with the constant pressure of the truth.
That's what I'm talking about. That's why I say free the code a lot. I'm trying to create new memes, because being like, no, they're wrong, is just going to empower them.
And that's what Republicans do all the time. Instead of Republicans saying, here's what we want and why, they say no to Democrats.
Yeah.
Michael Malice brought this up. He said, you've got Democrats that are saying, we want universal health care. We want you to give to us. And the Republicans say no. Where's the Republican to come out and say, I want to repeal the NFA or repeal some of these gun laws, or to say we want a law that does X for us on gun rights? Typically, they're resisting Democrats' offense, always on the defense. Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, I'll give you a great example, and I was sharing this with some folks at CPAC yesterday. Remember the Olympic hammer thrower who came out? She turned her back on the national
anthem. Gwen Berry.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if someone just came out and put a little meme, just a side-by-side comparison, of Jesse Owens in 1936, standing on that pedestal after winning the gold medal and saluting while the national anthem was being played. Munich, Germany, 1936. You know who was the chancellor of Germany right then?
Oh, yeah.
Adolf Hitler. And then just at the bottom says, who's the real hero? And see, that's how we deconstruct everything that they say. Just like right now with this mandatory vaccinations, let's just take their language and say, my body, my choice.
People have been doing that. I love it.
Yeah.
Candace Owens tweeted something about how her family has decided, you know, what's best for them. And people called her pro-choice. And I just look at this and I'm like, here's what happens. You get these young people. They have no political experience. Mm-hmm. They see some older person say, here's how you respond to it. But it's nonsensical. The left either is lying or doesn't understand that conservatives' argument is there are two people involved in one body with when it comes to pro-life.
Yeah.
And if Candace Owens says my individual family member made a choice, she's not deciding for another life. It's like they don't understand anything that conservatives say, and it's probably because they are just in this isolated bubble. They don't talk. They're in the box.
Echo chamber.
Yeah. Right.
They're in their own echo chamber. And yep. And that's why it's so important to understand that when they start to yell and scream at you, when they're starting to call you the names, instead of retreating. Remember what Ayn Rand said, the constant retreat. You've got to, you know, more constant pressure because you're winning the debate. You have taken them past their initial little talking point, which is an inch deep, and you need to go on the offense. But too often what we do is when they call us a name, we go on the defense, which emboldens them and gives them the power, and we see that over to them. But we have got to be more aggressive and continue to pound them with the truth.
Yeah.
That's why the critical race theory stuff is really effective. It's funny. I mean, we're talking about this stuff in schools. Christopher Rufo has been leading this charge, James Lindsay as well. And they start screaming, no one's teaching critical race theory. You get John Leguizamo coming out being like, yo, this is just a legal talky talk or whatever. And it's funny because I saw someone on Twitter point out, if you've got a problem with us calling everything critical race theory, it's no different from you calling everything white supremacy. So welcome to the same game you've been playing.
Absolutely.
And they hate it.
But you know what is interesting? That completely debunks what they're saying is that when the head of the American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingarten, stands up and says, we are going to teach critical race theory. Yep. And we are going to go after parents who try to, you know, stand up against us. So in other words, what the teachers unions, the left, has decided is they have initiated a war on parents. Now, remember the war on women? Why don't we come out and say, there's a war on parents? There was a war on parents trying to make sure that their kids are getting a good education and not an indoctrination, especially in your urban, you know, school districts where kids aren't reading at level. Kids aren't doing math at level. But what do they want? They want to teach them that, well, Ian,
Lydia.
Yeah. Ian, Lydia, and Tim, you're oppressing me.
Oh, I'm not.
Yeah, you are.
No, I'm actually
I'll never mixed. Stop, Alan.
No.
Yeah.
No, you're not. Your skin is white, man.
Nope. So I don't think,
no, you're oppressing me.
You're conservative.
No, you're trying to put it on me. No, you're oppressing me.
Well, you can't.
I'm a victim.
Nope, you're
oppressing me. I'm a victim. But that's how I see it. But that's what critical race theory is saying to me.
Absolutely.
Right. But now you're telling me I'm a victim of you telling me I'm oppressing you. Now I'm the victim.
No.
It never ends. It's a cycle.
No. In critical race theory.
You're stuck in it.
Oh, no.
In critical race theory, it's actually fairly simple. You as a conservative instantly become a white supremacist. Now, as for me,
and that's true. And also, Joe Biden said that since I didn't vote for him, I'm not black. So guess what? I am screwed.
I'm just like you guys.
Now check this out, though.
Dang, I'm just as white as Lydia.
Shocking.
The reality is, for both of us, if we agree with them, then we're both oppressed. If we disagree with them, then we're both racists and our backgrounds don't matter or anything like that.
But do you understand how confusing that is? So just teach your kids math and reading. And stop screwing around with their minds and trying to indoctrinate them. But the great thing, Tim, is that when you talk about this critical race theory, 2 years ago, no one knew who their school board member was.
Yeah.
No one went to school board meetings. No one even cared. Who is that? But now all of a sudden, you've got parents showing up. You've got parents fighting and pushing back. I mean, you had that story about the parent that a FOIA request.
Oh, I pulled this up.
Yeah.
So we've got this from the Daily Signal. Mom says school board threatened to sue her for seeking public information on critical race theory in curriculum. The craziest thing about it is she found out because in their meeting minute, like their itinerary, it says discussion action filing lawsuit against Nicole Solis to challenge filing over 160 APRA requests.
Whoa.
This is a mom who said, I just want documents on the curriculum to see if you're teaching kids critical race theory. And then before she gets any notification, they're discussing filing a lawsuit against her over this. What are they hiding?
And see, this is the mom that in 2020, they went after the suburban soccer mom. Orange man, bad, whatever. But now, because of their overreach, they just made that mom an activist. And they just made that mom engaged in the political process. And that is going to be the difference as we go forward. It really, and Lydia and I were talking about this driving up here. Too often people have just focused on the federal government. I know who my congressman, my senator, I'm voting for president and nothing else. Now people are starting to realize the school board and the city council, that level of governance that touches you the most. Tip O'Neill said, all politics are local. Now people are getting engaged and that is scaring the bejesus out of the left.
And you know what I think a lot of people are realizing too? How important their governors are. A lot of people didn't pay attention to this. And so we were talking about...
Well, I hope they pay attention to the race that I'm in.
Well, that's the point, right?
Yeah.
So we were... I can't remember who we were talking to. We were talking about Ron DeSantis and maybe a Trump-DeSantis ticket. And the fear from some of these people in Florida is like, but if you take away Ron DeSantis from Florida and he enters a presidency that doesn't control the Congress or the courts... Then you end up depowering DeSantis because he is an effective governor in Florida.
And that's what people are starting to realize is that the states are the most important entity. And then from the states, it goes down to the county commissions, to the city councils, to the school boards. And that's where Republicans have not done a real good job of focusing on previously. And that has been a big turn that we saw in the state of Texas. We won back a lot of school board seats. We won back a lot of city council seats because we got people engaged. We got people focusing on that in our municipal level elections this past May.
You got to understand, though, how I think these people are evil, because what they're doing is these critical race theorists, they want to bring what we call critical race applied principles or crap into these schools. And they will move from blue cities, Democrat cities, into rural areas, into red areas, run for the board with no political affiliation, and then once they're in, indoctrinate the kids.
Yes.
So we're seeing this in West Virginia, in areas that are deep red. You got MAGA flags, Trump flags. There are flags that say F Biden everywhere. But for some reason, the schools are adamant about critical race applied principles being taught to these kids. And it's because many of the parents weren't paying attention.
They are now.
They are now.
Yeah.
And you were seeing these videos of the moms showing up at this meeting screaming. There was that one really viral video of that black man saying his kids are being told they can't succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how insidious and nefarious it is to tell that man's children they can't succeed.
That's how you're trying to make the next generation of victims.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what progressive socialism has to have. I mean, if you're a victor, why do you need them? OK, Okay, why do you need the handout? Why do you need to be told to stay at home and we'll send you a check? You know, I want to get out and I want to work for myself. And that's the corruption. That's the undermining of the fabric of America that we see. And that is really the liberty and freedom that you're talking about, Ian. The ability to go out with your own mind and do for yourself. But when they take that away, then all of a sudden you have these young people, like you're saying, that America sucks. America's horrible. America's bad.
The biggest institutionalization happened over the past year. When they locked everybody down, shut down the businesses, and then put them on government payments.
Mm-hmm.
And now these people are stuck in it. You can't just cancel it.
They become institutionalized.
Yep. So how are you gonna, you're getting $16 an hour on average from these payments. You can't be evicted. Why are you going to go find a job somewhere that pays $16 an hour and get it for free?
And that's how they back in went into a living wage.
That's right.
They couldn't get it through a legislative process. So what did they do? They put people out of work. They back ended it. And they went and destroyed and decimated the mom and pop stores, all the small businesses. And now they are dependent upon the government.
But I think it's an exploitation of the weakness of many of these people and the circumstances many of these people find themselves in, mostly in cities.
Of course.
Out here, we've been growing a lot of our own food.
It's a rugged individualism once you get outside the city.
That's right.
But even myself growing up in the inner city of Atlanta, Georgia, we had our own garden and, you know, got back there with my dad and we worked the garden. We grew our own food and whatever. But how much of that do you see today?
But people need to.
They got to.
Exactly. When the government comes and says, now you're dependent upon us, you can say, I'll grow my own food.
It kind of started off like, as Americans, we were all kind of decentralized. We had our state, we had our local farms, we worked locally, and then it slowly started to federalize over the 1800s and became more and more centralized. And now with the internet, it's shattering and decentralizing again because you can see like a local guy farming makes a YouTube channel, has 1.6 million followers, and people start emulating his local behavior locally. And you see like Ron DeSantis is a super famous guy who's mm-hmm. a governor who like 20 or 30 years ago, you might not even know his name.
Ah, but now what are they doing? You have the Facebook, you have the Twitters and the YouTubes that are going out and saying, that content we're going to censor.
Yeah,
and
it's pressure.
It
like
is.
The Ayn Rand quote. Mm. This is what I explain to people. They're not outright banning us. They're slowly, slowly banning channels. Mm-hmm. They've given Steven Crowder several strikes. They're really close, trying to getting rid of him. And one of the strikes Crowder got was for quoting CDC data. They don't care. Now, for us, we get the applied pressure. That's where people mention, hey, I don't get notifications for your videos anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird that somebody would come and watch this show every day we do it at 8 p.m. And then YouTube would think they don't like. Here's the YouTube's argument is, if people don't click the notifications and don't engage in the content, we're not going to notify them anymore, even if they ask for the notifications. Then how is it we have people saying, I watch a show every day, I'm not getting notifications anymore, or I was unsubscribed from your channel? These are the things that people have been feeling for some time, and it's the pressure they put on you, because here's what they want. They isolate the audience that can watch a show like this, so that over time we don't get new viewers, but we slowly, slowly lose viewers.
True.
Unless
they bleed you out.
Right. However, I think we've been doing a particularly good job. I think Crowder has. We are growing regardless. That's why I say sharing this video and sharing the videos of the creators you like shuts down that attempt to put obstacles in our way. Mm-hmm. They're going to give as many advantages as possible to all of the left channels. These podcasts appear on the front page. You've never used a computer before. You open it up, you turn on YouTube, boom, there's a left-wing mainstream establishment podcast. For stuff like this, anti-establishment or right-wing content, nah, it's not going to happen. They're going to push you down. They're going to hide you from the main algorithm. You're not going to see what's happening.
But isn't it understanding, again, Lydia and I, we had great conversation driving up from Reagan Airport. This is the 1984. This is the brave new world that we're living in. And, you know, young people, I just got to ask, why do you want to hang out with control freaks? Hmm. I mean, if you're on a college campus, why do you want to hang out with the people that are going to tell you what you can see, what you can eat, what you can wear, what you can drive? You know, all of this stuff. I thought, you know, me being a dad, now grandpa, you know, my daughters always say, leave me alone. Let me do my own thing. But now you've got, you know, big government coming in and telling you exactly everything. You know, flying up here, and we were discussing this, I am sick and tired of hearing the constant drone in the airport. The TSA, the law says that you must wear a mask in the airport. Not failing to wear a mask will result in a fine or criminal penalties. And I'm thinking, say, what law? There's never been a law.
I think Thomas Massie tweeted this. Yeah. We never voted on that.
No, that's what I'm saying. There's never been a law. And what is a law? I mean, I remember Schoolhouse Rock, and it kind of taught you how you get to become, you saw it was a bill, and then you become a law. There was never a law that says that we have to wear a mask in airports or you know, wherever. But see, when you are constantly droning people with this messaging and what you see out there in the public space, then all of a sudden people become the mindless lemmings and they just accept it, much the same as you saw in 1984. And so I would say to everybody that's out there, the next time you're in an airport or someplace and someone says that, you know, you have to follow this law, ask the person, what, show me the law. When was it passed? When was it signed? Because it was not. And so we are moving away from being a constitutional republic to being a constitutional monarchy where someone's just sitting back and signing stuff.
It's not even necessarily a monarchy. It's something, it's despotism. Yes. You saw it with these governors.
It's totalitarian.
Yeah. It was remarkable. Cuomo, he killed 15,000 people.
Yeah.
And nothing happens.
Yeah.
He's going to get away with it. He got away with it as far as I can tell, right?
Yeah, he will.
That's horrifying. It really is.
Beyond, or
he was warned,
Whitmer and everyone else.
He was warned that if he put sick people in these nursing homes, he would kill them. And he had the Mercy vessel. He had the Javits Center. And
never
he said,
used it.
Meh, kill the people instead. Mm-hmm. And that's it. He gets away with it. The only scandal that erupts. Okay, so that was a bit of a scandal. But then, oh no, he inappropriately talked to women and touched them. I mean, that's bad for sure. Yeah. But wow. He can kill 15,000 people, and the media is more concerned that he was inappropriate with women.
Yeah, he did the Bill Clinton, you know, habeas grabus.
Okay? Yeah. I'll tell you one thing. Watching some of these stories about schools and the indoctrination of children,
yeah.
I'm mixed in my pessimism and optimism. I'm optimistic. Steve Bannon said something that when these mothers see what their kids are being taught, there's going to be a major revolt, and it's going to cause massive change. And I think he's right. I think when a little kid comes home and tells their mom they're evil and they hate them, the mom's going to be like, what happened to my baby? Like, they're not going to stand for that. But I'll tell you what makes me really optimistic is what you're talking about with the states, the power the states have, and we've seen it. Ron DeSantis hitting it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Texas is doing pretty good. Pretty good. I think maybe when you're when you're in there.
Yeah, I mean, we lost some 10,000 small businesses, and really, you know, Ron DeSantis is the gold standard right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are a lot of things. Look, our border. We should not be sitting around asking for a mother may I from the federal government. We should be doing everything possible to protect and secure our border.
I want to follow up on that a little. If you were going to establish the National Guard, like to protect the border, how would that work long term? Would they stay there for long periods of time?
They stay there until we get this thing under control. They stay there until we have, you know, driven the cartel into being irrelevant. They stay there until we make sure that we get that situation, because you got to stem the flow, and then you have the ability to, you know, start the deportations, start arresting people, start getting them out of the state. But you got to stem the flow, and no one is stemming the flow right now.
Would it be like building facilities for them to live at on the border? And then you just line up like basically bases, National Guard bases.
Well,
along the border.
I mean, you can set up some temporary type of housing, but the bottom line is that you get biometric data and you say, have a great day, and go back across the Rio Grande River. I mean, you're not coming into Texas to hang out, okay? You come across, and that's the deterrent. That's the deterrent that was there, the Remain in Mexico policy of President Trump, that the Biden administration flipped. And I think it's Section 42, which is the, you know, the COVID emergency order that President Trump put in place. If they lift that, then Katie barred the door. There's even more people that's going to come across.
I think it's remarkable that taking control of your borders is racist, according to Democrats.
Well, you know, like I said, I ain't really black, according to them. So,
yeah, right.
You know,
But then again,
you know, Tim, that's what I'm saying. I'm not responding
right
to those insidious.
Just do it.
Just do it.
Right.
And that's the problem of Republicans, because they put themselves in the box, in the corner that the left is trying to create for them. It's just saying, you know, I'm tired of your name calling. We're going to do what's right by the rule of law.
Absolutely. Let's take Super Chats.
Yes.
For those that have not already, give that like button a little tap. Subscribe to this channel. Share the show with your friends. If you're on iTunes, Spotify, whatever, share the podcast. And check out TimCast.com. We're going to have a spicy bonus segment or members-only podcast episode. It'll go up tonight around 11 or so p.m. And we're going to be talking about, I can't give you the full name. I'll just call it the Rainbow Bleep Bleep Monkey, because YouTube, it's a little too spicy for YouTube. But this is serious stuff, what they're doing to children. And it's not just in America. So we'll talk about that. Many of you may be familiar with the story, but we're going to get into that one. But let's read some Super Chats. James Cood said, new TimCast.com member, full-time soldier in the Texas National Guard. Come visit our great state, Tim and friends.
I would love to.
Yeah, but, you know, we were looking at a bunch of states before we settled on here. My fear with Texas is all the people from California and Arizona, they're coming. They're coming in. They're going to start voting.
There are two types of people, as we talked about, I think, before we went on camera. They're the folks that are leaving California, Illinois, New York, and New Jersey that are sick and tired of those places. They're conservatives, and they want to be in a place like Texas for the right principles and values. But then when you transport those large employment bases, and you see where they're settling in. They're settling in North Texas. They're settling in down there in Houston, Harris County. That's the concern. All of the major urban population centers in Texas, Dallas, Austin, Houston, San Antonio, El Paso are controlled by the left. And that's the playbook of the left, is to come in and take over the urban population centers where you see the largest amount of crime and all of these things. We have got to get into those urban population centers, and exactly what we've done, engaging with the Hispanic community, engaged with the Black community. They're conservative in nature. We just got to remind them of that.
All right. We got Zachary Birdie says, Lieutenant Colonel West, Texas voter here. Governor Abbott has made it clear that marijuana decriminalization is off the table while he is in office. How do you view the issue of marijuana legalization?
I support medical marijuana, but as far as legalizing marijuana, look, I'm probably not the guy to talk to about that. I've never smoked, never drank in my life, definitely never taken drugs, and I don't want to see that become a gateway to something even greater. And when you look at some of these other states that have legalized marijuana, such as in Colorado, they have some other issues. I know everyone's saying that that's a great boom for the economy, but even 60 Minutes said that it is not gone very well as far as the marijuana growth. Why? Because the government comes in and they institute regulations, okay?
You know what it has done, though? It's hindered the cartels very much so. It makes it really hard for them to compete when you've got Colorado with all their legal...
Yeah, but they're shifting to fentanyl. And so remember...
And avocados, actually. No joke.
Well, I'm not a big guacamole guy. but if you look at what just recently happened, I think about a month and a half ago, here in Washington, D.C., one of the largest fentanyl bust was right here in Washington, D.C. Yeah. Enough fentanyl to kill 21 million Americans. Okay. Sinaloa cartel. Now, where's the Sinaloa cartel operating across from? Across from Texas. So that shows you how that affects you.
With medical marijuana, I get concerned with red flag laws. So if someone goes in and they're like, I have an elbow injury, and they get medical marijuana, that's cool. But when they go, I have stress, and then they get medical marijuana, then they get put on a list.
Well, you've got to be very careful. I've got some very dear friends, and their son has these epileptic seizures. And, you know, it's been proven that that can help assuage his epileptic seizures.
Yes, CBD.
Absolutely. And so those are the type of things we have to look at. But, you know, going in and saying, hey, man, I just stumped my toe. I got a hangnail. I need some, you know, the THC. Nah, that's not what I'm talking
about. It's the CBD that's really
CBD
good.
Is very
non-psychoactive.
Good. Absolutely.
All right, let's see. Jackson Kai says, Tim, would you consider having Robert Barnes on the show? He's followed you for a long time and said he'd love it if you've had him on. Has a lot of inside info from Trump to Rittenhouse. We will, yes, absolutely. We'll figure out the schedule and we will look into Robert Barnes. I recently watched an episode of Viva Frey and Robert Barnes, of course. I'm very familiar with who they are. All right, Josh L. says, big fan, Tim, Ian, Lydia, and Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. I'm curious what Mr. West thinks of military movies. Just watched The Tomorrow War. Are there any very realistic movies, military movies, you'd recommend?
Well, I will tell you without a doubt, when you look at Black Hawk Down, that was very realistic. I loved, you know, the Saving Private Ryan. I think that Saving Private Ryan, when you saw that those opening moments of what happened at D-Day, it reminded people that bullets do hit bodies and they hurt bodies, because we kind of got this belief after Desert Shield, Desert Storm 30 years ago, that it was kind of like, you know, video games, what have you. So those are the type of movies that I really appreciate. And, you know, like I said, last night I was watching the French and Indian War, Last of the Mohicans.
Yeah. Did you see Platoon?
Yeah, I saw Platoon, but, you know, that was kind of over the top. You took everything that was bad about Vietnam and you put it in a 2.5-hour movie. And my older brother was in Vietnam. Were there problems in Vietnam? Absolutely. But I think Oliver Stone, you know, took that from a political approach.
Mm. It was like modeled around his time, too. He served in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. I think that was a lot about his personal experiences he tried to tie in.
All right. Let's see. Emerus Lilliam. Aramuris Lilliam says, for Alan West, first, thank you for your service. Second, I'm going into the Air Force as soon as a force soon as a geospatial intelligence analyst. Any words of advice?
I will tell you that, you know, what I saw recently from General Milley, who's the chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff and the chief of Naval Operations also, I'm very concerned about the politicization of our military, that we are starting, you know, in the military, we take an oath to the Constitution, but it is almost getting to the point where we're trying to make people take an oath to an ideology, and critical race theory should not be being implemented in our United States military. You cannot have an effective and cohesive force if you're telling one group that they're oppressed and the other group is an oppressor. And the other thing that concerns me, the lieutenant colonel who was relieved of command in the Space Force, because he spoke out against Marxism. Mm-hmm. Well, Marxism is the antithesis to our Constitution. So if we're getting to the point where we're going to punish commanders in the military for speaking out against something that once upon a time I stood on freedom's ramparts, you know, to fight against the old Soviet Union. But I will tell you, go into the military, honor your oath that you're taking, and always remember that even after you take off the uniform, your oath remains.
Right on. Brandon L. Martin says, Tim, have you thought about bringing on the average voter to the show? The well-known political pundits are great, but it would be interesting to see average voters and hear their voices on current events. We did talk about that for some time, getting some like regular working class people onto the show. But actually, I think what works better is doing a different show with regular working people. So some kind of either one or the other or both. Panel discussions where we have like a few different people talking, you know, and we can ask questions, and then actually just having like an open forum discussion. The original idea we had was to bring the van to various parts of the country and then do interviews with regular people, just like come up and talk to us, kind of like Change My Mind, like Crowder does, but more just, we're not going to argue with you. We're going to ask you basic, like, what do you think about Donald Trump? Get the answer. What do you think about the lockdowns? Get an answer. Then COVID happened. So, but we're expanding. The next show we're going to be launching is the Mysteries show. We have a name for it. It's going to be epic. The stories are awesome. And then we've got Chicken City, which is silly and very, very easy to set up and kind of just a side thing. But we're going to be doing this like regular people in the world kind of stuff, some man on the street stuff. And we're getting to that. We're also going to be doing short documentaries, on the ground investigations. We have now, I think, we have 7 people working in the newsroom so far, and the site's going to be launching soon. If you were watching earlier, we had an alpha version. You could see the site for a brief moment. There's a lot of work that has to be done on it, but it's going to be great.
Hey, I want to touch on Chicken City for a second. The early bird is the rooster, by the way. He's making sure everybody gets that worm. I think that he's screaming the rooster in the morning because he wants to wake people up to eat, either because he wants to get fed or he's waking up the other animals to go get the bugs and the worms because it's 4:40 in the morning.
No, he doesn't scream in the morning. He just screams all the time.
Dude, he'll come up to you a foot away from your face and look at you and then scream full volume.
That's right.
Over and over.
Yeah, like in the middle of the day. He's not screaming because it's the morning. He's screaming because he woke up in the morning. He wakes up and he's like, oh, I'm awake. He just yells what he does. It's hilarious to watch him. It's really funny how he, like, man, chicken rape culture, man.
Oh, it's bad.
It's like the rooster
just the dark underbelly of chicken life.
That rooster, man, he's not playing around. We didn't know we had a rooster. We didn't get a rooster. Yeah. It was assigned a female at birth and then grew up into a guy. And we were like, oh, I guess we have a rooster, but we wanted one anyway. So
he wasn't identifying.
Mm-mm. You know, we thought it was a hen until it started to go through, you know, chicken puberty.
Yeah.
And then we called the farm and he was like,
and no puberty blockers or hormone.
No, none of that. None of that.
No,
none
natural. Of that.
Good.
Yeah. And organic. Now it's huge. He's a big rooster.
He's a big beast.
He's going to get bigger too.
I like that guy.
Yeah. He's well fed, to put it mildly. We let him in the farm. They stole all the tomatoes. They went right for the tomatoes, stole as many as they could. It was hilarious. They were like, one was running around with a cherry tomato and I'm chasing it. It's good fun. It's good fun. All right, let's see where we're at. The Sinister Sibling says, I'm not American, so I don't fully understand. In my opinion, haven't the Texas Democrats essentially forfeited their positions of power in the Texas state government?
Yes, they have, and that's one of the things that people are talking about is that can you declare that those seats have been vacated and you can declare for a special election to replace those individuals?
Right on. All right, Bryant Chacon says, as an American born to Cuban immigrants, I spent several summers in Cuba and have seen the poverty firsthand. Great to see them standing up. Libertad. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
All right. P. Nilsson says, as a Texan, please tell Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, thank you for using his position in helping pass HB 1927, constitutional carry in Texas.
Yeah,
absolutely. And it's a sad thing that Texas was not the first state to get constitutional carry passed. It was the 21st.
And doesn't Texas have like a course to get a handgun license or something?
Yeah,
like that?
Yeah. I mean, and that's one of the things that you can still, if you want to go through that course to get your concealed carry permit, but that gives you reciprocity with other states. But if you can pass a background check, I mean, that's your weapon and the Constitution is your permit so you can carry that weapon. That's what constitutional carry is all about.
That's right.
Bernie Sanders has it in Vermont. It's crazy.
Yeah. All right. Kiyo Katsuma says, should I be worried trying to find a based lawyer in Chicago? My equity and inclusion director is inviting us to training to talk about how whiteness impacts us as an organization and individuals. I don't know, man. Probably Chicago might be hard, but the Chicago suburbs are actually fairly moderate. And if you go a little bit further out, you'll find a lot of Republicans. I mean, Illinois is almost entirely Republican except for Chicago.
But I would think that, you know, employees have to start coming together and filing, you know, class action suits to saying, you know, you can't, you know, I'm here to work. I'm here to, these are my duties and responsibilities. I'm not here for you to indoctrinate me into a certain ideology.
Yeah. All right. Let's see what we got. Let's see. I think YouTube would ban us if I read that one. So, you know, sometimes we just keep going. James says, I'm glad I'm a TimCast.com supporter because YouTube is going to demonetize this video. You know, surprisingly, we do get, they demonetize basically every show and then we put it up for review and then they monetize it. So we don't really rely on ads on the YouTube version of things. Mm-hmm. We started putting ads on the podcast version of things and, but Super Chats help make this show, keep it live. You know, that's, there's a lot of risk to being live.
Yeah.
Cause we've had, I think, four instances where people have said things where it's like, YouTube will ban us.
But so who would have ever thought that we would be living in a United States of America where you had to be worried about your speech, your expression, your right to peacefully assemble, or your right to petition your government for redress of grievances? Like I said, I'm 60 years of age, and I would have never thought that what I saw when I went over through Checkpoint Charlie to East Berlin in 1985 would be happening here. I mean, I just, you know, the Stasi and all of this stuff is happening here. The fact that you have Nancy Pelosi telling the Capitol Hill police that they can go down into Florida and, you know, start to go and investigate people, and that's crazy.
Yeah, it's really weird.
There have been a few Super Chats that have said this. We got this one from JS. Alan West must run with Trump. I am highly impressed. One person said they wished you were the VP choice instead of Pence.
That would have been awesome.
No, 2016. Right.
Well. Had you considered that? Or is that just something you got to get asked about?
You don't like run for VP. You got to, someone has to want you to do that.
Yeah.
But right now, the most important thing is that we have got to get Texas under control because they are targeting Texas. And if you destabilize Texas, the country's gone. Mm.
Michael Ford says, as a lifelong Texan, I love Greg Abbott, but I love Colonel West. It is going to be a hard fought election. If Abbott wins, at least Mr. West will force him farther right.
Yeah, but the sad thing is that's a politician's way, that I am just going to change my policies and my views and my visions just to get reelected. And if that's how you feel about what Greg Abbott is going to do, what does that say about what you're voting for?
Yep, that's right. That's a good point. All right. Greg Duvier says, I became a member last Friday since you pulled your video from YouTube. I've been enjoying listening to Tim and Ian uncensored. Oh, yeah, we swear. That it's not family friendly.
It's hot.
Yeah, so this YouTube version is more of a PG-13. Yeah,
get ready for this.
Oh, we don't bleep in the members only.
Oh,
no, it's live.
Yeah, no. Okay. YouTube is the more PG-13. Okay. You know, and plus YouTube's got ridiculous communist rules that we would get banned instantly if we said a name. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So we do what we can. And the members only.
You know, but again, it just drives me crazy that there are men and women who have served and sacrificed and committed and lost their lives to defend the Constitution and the rights that you have, your Bill of Rights, and we got these people that are just spitting in your eye.
No, it's crazy. This technocracy, this technocracy that's building, technocracy rising, I'm done with it.
Yeah.
We need to free the software code, disassemble power from these things and give it back to the people by creating a free software social network.
And it's a mobocracy too.
It's terrifying. Yeah. And I know the Republic is built to prevent against that, but these representatives also are getting bribed, so I'm interested in taking them out of the equation if we can. And you know,
what do you mean? voting people out and stuff?
Yeah, instead of having one person represent.
Yeah, be careful what you say, because the next thing you're going to say, well, Ian said he wanted to take people out of the equation.
Instead of having 430 representatives that each person is beholden to, I don't know how many, 70,000 Americans, just have these 70,000 Americans vote yes or no on something. It goes to a computer. The computer will say the tally is yay or no. And then
that's called the referendum. They do.
You have 430 of those yay or no's, and then you add them together. You don't need a person to collect it and say it for you. That's going to get bribed and lie and do what they want.
Well, then you have to get involved in the system to make sure that you have someone that is participating in a representative democracy. Because the fear is that you don't want a pure democracy. A pure democracy leans itself toward tyranny. Now, referendums, that's something that you can have at the local level. Case in point, the Austin City Council, very far left-leaning, they came out with that homeless camping ordinance. The people down in Austin, and Austin's a very blue city, they said, how many petitions, how many signatures do we need to get that on the ballot? And guess what? They overturned that homeless camping ordinance in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, referendums exist in not every state, but a lot of states.
A lot of states.
Was that like a direct democracy?
You get enough signatures.
On an issue. Yeah.
And it gets added on the ballot.
California.
That bothers me. I don't like direct democracy because mob.
But you're just calling for direct
democracy. No, I want a more direct republic. So rather than have these House members that are basically fielding their
constituents. Who drafts the bill?
The populace could. So, I mean, I love the national initiative for that situation. Well, you could allow them to still draft bills, but maybe not vote on them.
The representatives?
Yeah.
I don't think that system quite makes sense.
I don't know, man. They're getting bribed. And it's a big vulnerability in the system.
Here's what you got to understand. It's not necessarily that they're getting bribed. There was this famous moment where Marco Rubio was accused of taking money from the NRA, which has corrupted him. And he says, no. I think it was Rubio. It might have been Cruz. I think it was Rubio.
He said it was Rubio.
Yeah, I don't take money from the NRA. It's that the NRA gives me money because they like my views on gun rights.
Yeah. And we take them out to lunch, and then they're...
So what's really happening is not bribery. It's that the candidates you see up top are the ones who have the acceptable views by the various special interest groups.
Mm. Yeah, right. That's what we're told.
Now, Bernie Sanders and Trump got a lot of donations from regular people, though, and that pushed them up to the top. Mm-hmm. Bernie, however, for very obvious reasons, is not strong enough to break the door down into the establishment, and Trump was a little bit more than was needed to break the door down. I mean, he walked up and just kicked it and stormed in.
Well,
he did not
need that money.
Yeah.
I mean, he was able to come and fuel himself. Now, as opposed to a Bloomberg who could have, fueled it, but he didn't have a message. Mm-hmm. And he was just all over the place. The hypocrisy and the irony just lived through him.
It's going to get real interesting next year, 2023 and 2024. Because right now we're in the lull. We're in the calm before the storm. The presidential election ends. Everybody's a little burned out, tired. No elections. No big. Yeah. Next year's the midterms. Oh. Republicans, if they take back that House, ooh. What will they do with the power? Probably not a whole lot, but the Democrats are still worried about it.
Well, remember 2024, though, remember 2023. What history has shown that Bill Clinton, his first midterm election, lost 54 seats, contract with America, Newt Gingrich. Barack Obama lost 63 congressional seats in his first midterm election. So that's why it comes back to H.R. 1 and S1. That's why they want to have all of these things that they did in November 2020 codified into law can protect themselves. Absolutely, right now, so they can protect themselves about what's going to come down the pipe next November.
Yeah. All right. Crafter says, Alan West, you're a great inspiration, and I'm happy to see you on the Timcast IRL again. Tim, thank you for having Lieutenant Colonel Alan West on again. Hello, and thank you to Ian and Lydia and all those making Timcast IRL. Canadian, but the border is concerning. Yeah, people in Canada are basically locked up.
Yeah, they're locked down.
Yeah, crazy.
Yep. It's creepy, man. All right, let's see. Brandon Tom says, thank you, sir. Regarding the idea of party switching, please explain how the Republicans became the party of small government since the Civil War. I thought the Union was the industrialized populist side of the war.
Well, I think when you talk about smaller government, what you're looking at is a federal government that is less intrusive. They don't want to have the bigger government policies. They don't want to be the creation of the – look at the Great Society programs of Lyndon Johnson, that the welfare nanny state that was created. That's what they want to try to do. They want to have less regulations. And you saw that during the Trump administration where he said, if we're going to create a regulation, I think he was like 4 or 5 have to fall off the books. That's real constitutional conservatism. That's what the Republican Party is supposed to be about when they say the lower taxes, the smaller government, things of that nature. But again, being a progressive has nothing to do with a political party. It has everything to do with how you see the relationship between the individual and the institution of government. And if you believe that the institution of government is sovereign and supreme over the individual, you're a progressive. That's just the bottom line.
Progressive is just fancy branding.
Fancy branding.
Fancy branding.
Yeah, absolutely.
They were the original eugenicists.
Yes.
They wanted only what did they call it? They wanted specific people to have kids and not other people
it's
they didn't like.
So messed up because progress is so key and needed.
But that is how they can manipulate language because, you know, why do you want to be progressive? I mean, well, even we good. Have, don't you like flow? Don't you want progressive insurance?
All right, we got Greg McCormick. He says, future Governor West, thank you for your service.
My pleasure.
South Dakota is much like Texas and Florida in regards to freedoms and leadership. However, we lack real leadership in the U.S. Senate with John Thune. We need help getting him replaced. Do you have any ideas?
No, I mean, I don't know who you could elevate up there in South Dakota. But again, I think that you're going to see a real, you know, seismic shift across the United States of America. And, you know, once upon a time, you had those blue dog conservative Democrats, but the progressive left came in and just wiped them all out. And I think that you're going to start to see people look in the Republican Party for true constitutional conservatives that believe and will stand by what they say on the campaign trail and not like the previous guy said, well, you know, I'll just move a little bit more this way in order to get reelected. Right. And then after I'm reelected, I'll go right back to the same way. And that has been that what they call it, the bait and switch that you've seen a lot from people running on the Republican side. Look. Donald Trump came in and he did exactly what he said. And that was just amazing. A person that ran for political office that owned up to his promises.
Yeah.
I think it's storming.
It is totally
raining. Oh, it is.
If the power goes out, we'll panic and then plug in a bunch of batteries.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
All right. Are we good? I don't know if the storm interrupted, but.
No, I'm good.
All right, we're good because this one's a good one. Captain says, Tim, you inspired me. 29-inch M82A1 in flat dark earth is on order. So we did a video where I took out my 50 BMG M82 and, you know, we set it up and we fired it. We all missed, but we got a glancing shot on the steel target. We were hoping the steel target would actually just vaporize.
What was the range?
Oh, man, it was pretty decent. I'm not
1,000?
Sure. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We were a bit far away and it was a lot of fun. And, you know, we had, I forgot what it's called. I think it's like an RN52 or something. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-mm.
Breech loaded 50 BMG.
Wow.
Yeah, that hurt. And I didn't fire that one. Cause that's just, you put it in, you screw in the back, and then it goes all the force into your shoulder. So Luke fired around, my friend Luke, and the shockwave shut my phone off. Cause I was standing right next to him filming, and then my phone just turns off. And I was like, oh, come on. So they were like, go behind on the next one because you're going to hit. And it was like, but with the M82, it's semi-automatic, so a lot of that energy gets used for the reload. So it's actually not that bad.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a whole lot of fun.
Do you have favorite weapons you've used over the years?
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite is the M1 Garand. One of those, and I just love going out there because you know General Patton said that was the weapon that changed World War II.
Does that use a clip?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's so cool. I mean, you fire it, bing, it pops right out, and it's just an awesome weapon.
What was it that turned the tide of World War II?
I think it was the ingenuity of the individual American soldier. And if you think about what happened on D-Day, centralized control. They could not reposition the German forces without the approval of Adolf Hitler.
Oh, wow.
And that just enabled us to maneuver and do what was necessary. And we got that foothold into Normandy, and then we marched inland across France.
And don't forget, it was the Soviets who sent wave after wave of their own men to their deaths that overwhelmed the Nazis on
Stalingrad.
Eastern Front.
Yeah.
But that's
1942.
It's funny because we make fun of the Futurama, Zap Brannigan, like I send wave after wave of my own men. Actually, yeah, the Soviets were just like cheap crap and lots of it.
Yeah.
And they sacrificed just people.
They would send people without weapons behind the people with weapons. So when they would get killed, they'd run up and take their weapon and keep fighting.
Yes. Enemy at the gates.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Super you didn't brutal. See the movie? Enemy at the gates.
Check it out.
Yeah, about the great Russian sniper Vasily Zaitsev.
Whoa.
Jeez. Yeah.
All right, let's see. What do we got here? It's Leo says, I am 23 in Texas who wants desperately to make things happen that will defend our freedom. The problem is I have no idea where to start. Mr. West, what do you advise as a fellow Texan? Do I run for office?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me tell you why. Down in Kerrville, Texas, 19 years of age, Roman Garcia decides to run for city council against a entrenched progressive socialist and ended up beating her by 12 percentage points.
Wow. Yeah.
And I think that it's so important that we get our young people, instead of telling them to go and door knock and phone bank and everything, let's get them in the city councils. Let's get them in the school board. Who knows better about what's going on in our schools than someone that recently graduated from those schools? And so that's how you build your farm team. So I would say go out and see what you can do there locally in your city council and school boards and get engaged and get involved.
Right on. All right, Abe Eckstein says Larry Elder just announced he's running for governor in California. Wow, wouldn't that be amazing? Is that true?
Well, yes, it
look
is.
That up.
Larry Elder, California.
Yes, yes,
that would be absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Let's do it.
I would not want to debate Larry Elder.
Yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't want to. I'd be like, yeah, let me know. I'll take your word for it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need to debate him. He can give me advice. You know?
Yeah.
Have him run California. Mm-hmm. That'd be fantastic.
So
yeah, the problem with California is
too big.
No. It's the exploitation of the ignorant. Mm-hmm. You know, Jon Stewart, liberal Daily Show, said we need some kind of draft where people will serve the community for a certain amount of time because we've lost that connection to the community.
Absolutely,
he was basically saying service guarantees citizenship.
It does,
but you have a lot of people right now who have nothing. They're not tied in any way to the system, so they don't care.
They just want from the system.
I tell you, man, nothing bothered me more than seeing friends of mine, some skateboarders that I knew, posting videos of them being like, I'm doing what needs to be done, and dropping their mail-in ballot. And they're like, we got to stop Donald Trump. And I ask them, like, oh, what did Donald Trump do? Well, he's just bad. How is he bad? You know, he's like, he's a fascist. What does that mean? I'm just saying, man, like, we got to, bro, if you can't tell me what you're talking about, and you have just stepped in and voted for something you didn't know. I'll tell you what the problem is. The problem isn't any one man. The problem is an ignorant population with no care in the world for community who are saying, I saw something on the TV, so sure, have whatever you want.
Well, the amazing thing is that you got an organization that calls itself Antifa, which means anti-fascist. But what do? They beat up people that have points and insights and perspectives different from theirs. That's the nature
of fascism.
I mean,
they beat up small business owners.
Yeah.
It's you know, they'll come back at it with the academic definition of fascism is authoritarian nationalism. The problem is, sure, but Germany was taking over other countries.
Yes.
I'm not sure, like, when he was like, we're just taking the part of Poland that's ours, and then we're going to invade Poland. And France, that's ours too.
And
now.
Czechoslovakia and everything else. Yeah,
yeah, it wasn't, it's world domination.
Yes, it is.
So as far as I'm concerned, I just look, I'll say fascistic or authoritarian.
Yeah.
They do the same things.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you what's interesting is that Antifa is also identitarian. They believe race should be a core component in law.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have that in common with Hitler.
Well, the whole social justice thing is nothing but the forcible mandating of equality of outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is.
Equity. It's not justice.
No, it's
different.
Not. Yeah. Yeah. It's equality of opportunity. It's not equity. That's someone sitting somewhere else and saying, how do we make sure everybody's the same? Social egalitarianism is not a premise of the United States of America.
Here's a good one, though. John Curry says, would Alan West be willing to be Trump's chairman of the Joint Chiefs in 2025?
Well, to be chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you have to still be in the military.
Oh, there you go.
Could you, like, get
everybody's just like, we need Colonel West.
Could they, like, put you back in the military?
No, as a civilian, you know, I could be a Secretary of Defense, but I can't be a chairman of Joint Chiefs.
Oh, okay. All right, I can't read this name because it's in Cyrillic, and they said no notifications. There's simple reason. I've just discovered I got unsubbed from three of your channels.
No.
Random YouTube glitch. Ha.
Ha ha.
That's right. It's always a glitch,
maybe
isn't it?
Maybe a third party app possible?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Perhaps. But, you know, it's always funny how these glitches happen, isn't it?
Yeah, behind
so
the scenes.
Weird.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. We'll try and grab a couple more here. Pretty Boy Jeremy says, question for Alan West. With the concerns of school boards shutting people down, what's your thoughts on parents' duty? Do they need to do more?
Yeah, the parents need to be engaged, and the parents look up what happened at South Lake, Texas, with the Carroll Independent School District. Before there was critical race theory, there was the Cultural Competency Action Plan, and they were trying to force this into that school district. What did they do? They came together. They created the South Lake Families Pack. And normally in a municipal level election, school board, whatever, if you get 6% turnout, you're pretty happy, right? They had 41% turnout. And they went out in their community. They found good quality people to run for school board. And the margin of victory against the left was 40 percentage points.
Wow.
NBC News story. And so that's what you have to start doing at the community level. Once again, getting engaged, finding out who is on your school board and finding those candidates can run against them and support them and resource them. And then you continue on.
All right. So we got two pretty important ones. We got Scrog says, I cannot find his governor donation website, Texas Voter.
West4Texas.com. West4Texas.com.
All right.
Thank you.
Mitch Marco says, longtime listener, member, and first donor. How are you similar to Governor Abbott and different from him, and why are you better?
Well, I'm similar to Governor Abbott that I'm a Texan and I'm an American. I am different from him because I don't believe in begging for permission from the federal government. I believe that as a governor, it's your responsibility to protect the people. And the other thing that you will never see me do, no elected official has the enumerated power to decide who or what is essential in the state of Texas or anywhere in the country. The most essential thing in America is liberty. And Benjamin Franklin said, those who would surrender essential liberty for temporary security in the end don't deserve neither liberty or security.
And we'll lose both.
And that's right. Lose both.
Julian McBain says Republicans and libertarians need to dump money into deep blue districts to see things change. I think that's actually important. Yeah.
You got to go in behind enemy lines. And so, you know, as the chairman of the Republican Party of Texas, you know, you sit down and you look at the battlefield and you see what is the enemy going to do? Because you got to base your plan on what the enemy wants to do. So the Democrats wanted to go after the suburban soccer mom. They wanted to go orange man bad. Trump is hateful. He's a misogynist, whatever. And so I said, let's go into the Rio Grande Valley. We have never gone down and engaged, and let's connect with the Hispanic community and get them to understand that they're conservative in nature. And look at what happened. And that was the news story about how we flipped the Rio Grande Valley in November 2020.
Right on. A lot of people are mentioning it is West, the number four, and Texas.com. A lot of people are posting it. So
thank you.
All right. Let's we'll get in a couple more. SDP says, Governor West, wink, I'm curious your thoughts on Abbott from Tennessee. And am milk Tim to lukewarm on my governor and yours. America is craving statesmen again, and it's just about time.
Well, the important thing I always tell people, I'm not running against Greg Abbott. I'm running for Texas. And I want to show an example of leadership that people will want to rally to, because it's not about my interests or special interests. It's about the Texan interests. And our tagline for our campaign is defending the Texas Republic. Because when you think about what a republic means, it means the rule of law and individual rights, freedoms, and liberty.
Right on. Rionin Taka says Larry Elder becoming governor of Cali would make leftist heads literally explode. I would pay large amounts of money to watch it. Well, you can pay large amounts of money to help make it happen, I'm sure, if Larry is running. I'm sure he takes donations for his campaign, right?
Yeah. I'm sure he will. I'm sure he'll have a website set up. But I had heard rumors of it, and I guess it's confirmed. I know that my dear friend Herschel Walker is moving back to Georgia to run for Senate there. And I also know that there's a gentleman, another black Republican by the name of Vernon Jones, who has thrown his hat in the ring for running for governor of Georgia. And understand this, in the history of the United States of America, there has never been a black Republican elected governor.
That's right.
Never.
Oh, that's right.
Wow.
So that's now we could have the chance of three. Who do you think, Michael?
Who's more powerful, like the mayor of a big city or the governor?
The governor. As long as the governor understands that they are the governor.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look at Cuomo. You know, he was the governor. He killed 15,000 people and
got
away with it.
Done.
Yeah. That's right. Not even the federal government did anything to stop that. It's amazing. Yeah. Anyway, thanks for hanging out, everybody. We're going to have a special members-only show coming up at timcast.com. So sign up. We're going to be talking about the rainbow blank blank or bleep bleep monkey and that fiasco and the targeting of children, the indoctrination. It's a bit spicy for YouTube. So, again, timcast.com. Become a member. You can follow the show on Facebook and Instagram at timcastirl. Where you can like the videos and share them to help, you know, help us leverage those networks to build a following and move them over to the website. We ultimately don't want to be using these censorious platforms, but we're going to use the platform as to the best of our abilities to make TimCast.com big and massive and do more shows. You can follow me personally at TimCast, and we do the show Monday through Friday live at 8 p.m. But I believe, Lieutenant Colonel West, you have a website or some social media you want to shout out?
Yes, West4Texas.com, the number four. We found out that Governor Abbott's folks bought the website WestForTexas.com.
Wow.
Hey, look, you know, that shows that people are kind of nervous and scared. But West, the number four, Texas.com, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, all of those platforms, we're out there.
Right on.
Thanks.
You can also follow me, iancrossland.net, and at iancrossland on social media. I wanted to ask you guys before we rolled, have you ever seen Band of Brothers?
Of course.
Oh, my, have you seen that?
No.
Tom Hanks' movie about World War II. What is the
Airborne? Yeah, it's a documentary of the 506 Parachute Infantry Regiment.
Dude.
Kurahi.
Yeah, the best. David Schwimmer's in it.
But you also need to watch The Pacific, which is the story of the Marines and all the island hopping that they did also.
Oh, wow.
Also a true story.
Have you seen 1917?
Oh, of course I have.
Amazing.
It is. Oh, it is, man. Brilliant. Yeah, it just grips you.
Dude, Trench Warfare. Talk about.
That movie was fantastic.
Yeah, we're all armed with guns in the United States, but trench warfare, 25,000 people, 250,000 Frenchmen would die one day as 200,000 Germans in one day, one battle.
The movie is mostly real time.
Yeah.
So that's amazing.
Yeah. Oh,
man. Mostly.
Have you been to the Antietam battlefield? This not too far from here?
I don't think so.
You guys need to go to the – I mean, that is the worst day of military loss in U.S. history, 22,000 in one day. So Antietam is not far from you all here. And, of course, Gettysburg is an incredible battlefield. It's still preserved, and you get eerie chills when you stand there and just, you know, being at the Little Round Top or some of the other places. So
I've been to Antietam. We didn't go to the sites or anything like that, though.
Yeah, go to Antietam. Check it out. To Gettysburg.
Right on.
Yeah, I'm going to be going there this summer. I've been seeing all these signs. I'm like, I got to go there. I got to go there. I have like a whole list, and I'm going to do it around my birthday, I think. Thank you very much for coming and sharing your intergenerational wisdom.
Oh, I don't even know what that means, but that's okay.
she called you old guy.
That was young, right?
You're welcome. It is intergenerational. Just go with it. It's fine. Right, you're very wise. We appreciate that here. You guys are welcome to follow me at Sour Patch Lids on Twitter as I attempt to have more followers than Sour Patch Kids.
We will see you all over at timcast.com. Thanks for hanging out. And this should be a fun members-only segment coming up. We'll see you there.
Bye, guys.